DAB, online and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio. Up to the minute breaking news and instant reaction on the radio station that's got everyone talking.
The manifestos, the mandates, the mother of all radio stations.
Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
Good evening, 1 minute past 10 in the evening, and, well, it's not the voice of Ian Lee you're hearing tonight, or Kath. Yes, it's me, Christo, in for Ian and Kath with a special programme, giving you the chance to have your say on, well, another extraordinary day in Parliament. And, of course, well, you must have been living under a rock if you're not aware of the fact that the December the 12th looks like it's going to be the date of the general election. It's now confirmed. Boris has had a good day today as Prime Minister, and that's not something you'll have heard very often, but he actually got the general election that he wanted. December the 12th is when it's taking place. There was talk of it, perhaps, and amendments that were put forward of it being on the 9th or the 10th or various other days. I think the Liberal Democrats were a little worried that students would have gone home by the 12th of December. There were also amendments put forward which weren't debated in the end regarding EU nationals who are here in the UK getting the vote as well. But all of that got put aside. December the 12th, election taking place. Now, in a moment, we'll talk to our news editor, David Spencer, to get an update on everything that's been happening today. We'll go right back to the start and let you know everything that you need to know about what's coming up on December the 12th and, of course, the weeks before that. But I want to give you the chance on 0344 499 1000 to tell me whether you think an election is a good idea to solve the problems that we're in at the moment. Is the election the answer? 0344 499 1000. Lots of people talking about a hung parliament. Lots of people saying that the Leave vote will be split between the Brexit Party and the Tory Party. Lots of people saying the Remain vote will be split between the Liberal Democrats and Labour. Surely we're not heading for another hung parliament and the same again. So you tell me, do you think this is going to sort out the problem? Did you jump for joy when you heard about this general election? Or are you a little bit electioned out? We've had one in 2015. We had the referendum in 2016. We had another election in 2017. And now, welcome to your early Christmas present, 2019, a general election. Well, someone who I know loves elections, loves talking about them, and my God, it's a good job he does, because he's had a lot of time to talk about them over the last few years, is our news editor, David Spencer, who joins me live in the studio. David, another election.
What we want, just what we wanted, and I'm pretty sure there are journalists in the West Country, if you may remember Brenda in Bristol, yes, and that famous Vox Pop quote, when she was caught in the street being told there was an election, and we all heard her say, not another one. I'm sure she is being sought out now for her reaction.
Because if she's not drinking heavily in the corner somewhere, like many of us are.
She may well be doing exactly that, because, as you say, it's extraordinary. Three elections in a very short space of time. Barring
1923, they said that the last time we had an election in December, and hey presto, ended up with a hung parliament.
Exactly. And we are, you touched on it there in terms of asking what people think, whether this is a good idea. We have moved into the era of that political shift where a hung parliament was more likely. And we don't live, I mean, we had a coalition for 5 years, and Britain doesn't do coalitions. And it was something that was very strange for Downing Street and those in government, but also for journalists reporting on it, and for the public who were trying to work out two parties in government. Could that happen again? Well, it will be very interesting, because if you speak to all the different sides, they're going to tell you very different things about where we stand right now. The polls have been a bit erratic over the last couple of weeks, but one thing looks pretty sure is that Boris Johnson will go in with a fairly consistent lead for the Conservatives in most of the polling as we start this campaign. Not quite the same lead as Theresa May had when she called her election.
That went well for her, didn't it?
Yes, we know how that ended up. I think it's fair to say two very different personalities, and those that are part of the Labour movement and feeling, well, it's a smaller gap for us to close because we had such a good campaign last time, they face a very different person that they're challenging.
I mean, love or loathe Boris, love or loathe what he might have done in the past, what he might have said in the present, what he, whether he's an honourable person or not, he will come alive on the campaign trail. I mean, you know that it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be fun, and it's going to be an engaging campaign from him. And you probably, it's fair to say, couldn't say the same about Theresa May, could you?
Exactly that. And we know from his political history that Boris Johnson campaigns well. Whether it's London mayor, whether in the end when he actually got to campaign to be Tory leader, which of course he missed out on the first time when Theresa May was kind of given it because everyone stood aside, and we know about that. When he then got to stand up against Jeremy Hunt, how he campaigned pretty well in that, well, you would argue.
He's brilliant at, sorry to interrupt, but he's brilliant at, I don't think I've seen a politician quite as good as him, and this is something when you think about politicians, at not answering a question. He's brilliant at it, in as much as, you know, Boris, you directly lied about this. I don't think the public want to talk about that. They want to talk about this, and that's his stock answer, and it works. He's brilliant at it.
I think he spent quite a long time avoiding a lot of questions that he definitely doesn't want to answer. I mean, definitely what you touched on there, though, is that he has this personality, which, with the greatest respect to Theresa May, that election campaign showed that she didn't connect. It was a very dry, it just didn't ignite
that,
any
course,
imagination.
Disastrous social care policy as well, where you know, at a time where I don't think, you know, obviously social care is a huge issue, but I think for the 2017 election it probably wasn't an issue at the top of people's minds, obviously because that was pretty much a Brexit election, very much like what we're facing now. Yet, of course, she introduced this policy, which was almost communist in the fact that it, you know, it would take away your house if you required care, which was very left wing, very left field from the Tories. And, of course, then very, very hastily, she had to do a U-turn on that, which really damaged her credibility, didn't it?
It did. And there was a lot of focus on the advisers during that campaign and what she was being told, and the sort of bit of a tear in number 10 about what was happening there. And we've heard a lot about the main person advising Boris Johnson over the last few months. And I would argue that possibly they've got to the stage pretty much that they're happy with. I think, as you touched on at the start of the show, there was some movement today in whether which day of the week this election was going to be. You know, was it going to be Monday or Thursday? Was it going to be the Tuesday or the Wednesday? The Tories, probably Boris Johnson, Dominic Cummings, didn't mind what day it was going to be, really. In the end, they've got the Thursday, the 12th. And I think they will be very confident that those sort of mistakes made by Theresa May and her team in that election campaign, they will not make those sort of mistakes. And you're absolutely right. Boris Johnson can, he plays a politician very well, but also what he has proven in his history, he connects to some sort of audience. And Jeremy Corbyn,
he's got charisma in droves. I mean, you might look, like I said, disagree with him, but he is oozing charisma and a sense of humour and all those things that we accuse politicians actually of not having.
Exactly that. And last time, Jeremy Corbyn connected, as we saw, with a certain audience, with not necessarily charisma as the same way as Boris Johnson, but in messaging and being very clear. What we've learned in politics over the last three or four years, is having a clear message. And what this is going to be forced on, they're going to say quite a few times over the next few weeks, there are more issues than Brexit to talk about. We know that Brexit will dominate this election. And I'm sure this reference will be made by lots of people. Boris Johnson began his reign in number 10 back in the summer when he was saying, we are going to leave the EU, do or die, on Halloween. That's how he started.
Do or die, of course, he told us that.
Exactly. He told Talk Radio, do or die, on Halloween. It's now Friday the 13th when he'll find out if he can actually take us out of the EU.
Very, very interesting. Okay, let's, just for anyone who hasn't been keeping an eye on what's been happening today, let's go back to where we started with this election and Boris wanting it. Now, the last thing that we knew before today's events was that the other parties were against an election until there was a firm guarantee that a no-deal Brexit was off the table, and that also that Boris could somehow prove that he wouldn't fiddle with the dates after the election had been called in order to sort of covertly put no-deal back on the table. So what guarantees were made today to get no-deal off the table that made Labour decide to back the election?
They got enough assurances that that wasn't going to happen, that no deal was taken off the table in this phase, because we're now into an election campaign. So that was the change of mood and that sort of change of certainty early today. Seems such a long time ago how it's played out. Almost seems like it's been 2 days. And when they said they would back the move for an election, that shifted the understanding of what was going to happen across the day. At various points during today, though, it did drift in and out of certainty, and we were doing our percentage prediction, and at some points, you know, it was still 50-50 as to whether we would be able at the end of the day to effectively confirm there's an election. There's some procedural stuff with the Lords tomorrow that we don't expect to cause any problem, and the bill should be through by the end of the week, and we'll be into the campaign next week. But yes, that shift, he got enough assurances, Jeremy Corbyn, that no deal was out of the way. They've agreed to the EU extension until January the 31st, and now they can fight the election on that basis of the arguments within Brexit. Now, what the parties have to do, as the Lib Dems had already said over the last couple of weeks, that they're going to campaign on the let's chuck out Article 50, we're going to vote to remain in the EU.
Revoke
and remain, and have that clear messaging. It's up to Labour to work out their messaging, because we know where Boris Johnson is obviously coming from what he's been saying since he moved into number 10. So I think that is the only thing that some people, analysts, would look to say, because we know that Labour has shifted slightly.
And they have this position at the moment, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're right, it has shifted, but their position on Brexit at the moment is that they would renegotiate a deal with the European Union. They would then put the renegotiated deal to their National Executive Committee to decide whether, as a party, they would back that deal in a second referendum or back remaining in a second referendum. But after they had renegotiated, they would be keen for a second referendum.
That, and I could see the look on your face as you explained that.
I'm confused myself.
But that is where the problem is for Labour, in that mechanism, in that is not quite as clear as you explained that, as saying revoke and remain, or this is my deal, we got this deal agreed, vote for me on which is where Boris Johnson is.
Presumably, if you were a passionate remainer, you would think that that's too many hurdles to get your remaining as a result of Labour being in. And if you are a passionate leaver, you might not risk wanting to vote for Labour, because you might not end up with the Brexit that you want. And you're quite right. I mean, the Lib Dems, whether you agree with their stance or not, and of course there's a lot of debate to be had about whether revoking Article 50 is a good idea or indeed democratic, you can't say that they don't have a definite position, and that is to revoke, even though their position has changed as well, because I remember looking at Lib Dem literature not so long ago where they were campaigning for the referendum in the first place, so they've kind of shifted a little as well.
But there is a strong army, a strong belief, a strong support that a referendum would be the right thing to do once we have an understanding of a deal. And if Labour go in on that, there is a view that they will garner support from people who think, well, actually, now that we know the terms, we can get a vote on whether that's the right thing to do. But of course, as we said, there needs to be some clarity on how that would work.
Of course, we've spoken about where the Lib Dems are. We've spoken about Labour and their slightly muddled, but position nonetheless. We know where the Conservatives are with Boris Johnson's deal, and presumably they will be campaigning on that basis. But of course, one big elephant in the room that we've ignored is the Brexit Party. And of course, they have a very definite view as well, in as much as that they see Boris Johnson's deal as a betrayal, as not being Brexit. I mean, I don't know whether no deal is their official policy, but certainly they are more enthusiastic about no deal than they are about Boris's deal. And of course, we could see a position where then the Leave vote is split between the Tories and the Brexit Party. I think I saw a poll earlier saying that a quarter of Leavers will vote the Brexit Party, as current polling says.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because speaking on talk radio over the last few days, actually, we heard the former Prime Minister Tony Blair talking about what Nigel Farage had said about what he thought of Boris Johnson's deal. And he, and Tony Blair was saying Nigel Farage was actually one of the most logical things that had been said was, if you really want to leave and if you really want to remove yourself from all of this kind of Brussels legislation, then no deal might be the best way to leave. And there are people that would agree with that. And the Brexit Party's kind of stance to effectively say no deal, which, although it's off the table in this phase up to this election, there's nothing to say that after Boris Johnson wins the election, he has a deal. He might be in a position to get that backed in Parliament, but he could still, if there is any trouble with that, because we don't know how the election will play out, he could leave without a deal.
Because he'd have the numbers in Parliament to then leave without a deal, which of course many people think would be utterly disastrous for the United Kingdom, based on well, WTO tariffs and border checks and the like, though others, of course, think that that's being slightly overplayed. Why is, I mean, maybe this isn't a question you can answer, but why is an election better than a referendum? A lot of people extremely worried. Tony Blair actually said at the weekend that we should have a referendum and an election. I mean, my word, I don't think we want both on the same day. But a lot of people worry that this isn't going to solve the problem and that we'll end up with a hung parliament, or we'll end up without this problem solved. I mean, surely a second referendum, whether you love or loathe it, will give an answer. Either the deal Boris has come up with, which we now know is tangible on a piece of paper, you can read it, you know exactly what it's about. It's not based on sound bites about what we imagine Brexit would be. It's actually there or remaining. I mean, we would get an answer from that.
You would get an answer from that, but I don't think the referendum question would be quite as simple as that necessarily, because there are nuances within whether that would be simply that deal or remain and then revoke Article 50, because that wouldn't necessarily be the simple option. And a lot of people who argue against the referendum go, well, what if it's 52-48 the other way, and you kind of, right, it's one all, you need to have a decider. An election, though, troubles people because of what you've just said. Our recent political history has shown it's very hard for either of our traditionally main parties, for the Conservatives or Labour, to win outright with a big majority. The recent political history shows that we're in, over the last few years, every time, and you'll know from when we went back to the referendum, you'd get political analysts, you get journalists like me saying about, well, people don't do this. Donald Trump won't win the US election, for example. You had lots of people saying those sort of things. And the elections have constantly surprised people. We are in uncharted waters for where we are politically and with our agenda. So making predictions and seeing how people behave is very hard to do. And there is nothing to say that one of the parties cannot lead into this election and win well and win with enough majority to then push through whatever they want.
I mean, you are a seasoned news editor, David. I mean, I won't ask your age, but you know, you've been around the news block a few times.
There's
it's
been a
fair
few
to
elections,
say.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever known times like this? Have you ever known elections so close together? Have you ever known the country in such confusion and division?
No, and you mentioned about referendum. Remember, we had a Scottish, you know, independence referendum as well in a kind of phase.
We're becoming sick of democracy. We've got too much democracy in this country.
We're becoming Switzerland, who normally have three or four referendum a year. They certainly like elections. But it is absolutely, in terms of the politics of the country, it is, you know, as significant as we were, as lots of people say, since the Second World War. It is as significant as that, what we've been going through. And I think, going back to my point, that makes all of these predictions very hard. And we are going into a whole new phase over the next few weeks where, even by the fact that we got an election in December for the first time in nearly 100 years, there are all sorts of things that are uncertain around that. People worried about where students are. We're worried about what the weather might be, because if it's cold, and the Tories have, we know, a traditionally older audience, that if it's snowing and it's -5 on December the 12th, there will be fewer people turning out. There will be, and that may hit an older demographic more than a younger demographic. There are lots of issues around a December election just by the fact the days are dark and quite miserable. Come, you know, as someone pointed out, not far off the shortest day of the year. Jeremy Corbyn said that in the Commons yesterday about the timing of that. So all of those things will be a factor, and all of those things that, again, make those predictions really hard.
David, thank you very much indeed. That's our news editor, David Spencer, getting you up to date with where we are today and how we got here. I mean, we could have probably filled an entire radio show with how we got to where we are today. So the fact you managed it in 10 or 15 minutes, David, is pretty much a miracle. You will have the chance to give your opinions on what's coming up in December the 12th, your election, your Christmas present from the government, 03444991000. Will it solve the problem, and is this a good idea or not? I'm not asking which way you're going to vote, but I'm asking whether you think the big Brexit question will actually be solved by having an election. I fear it won't be, but I'd like to know what you think. Vernon is going to be coming up next in Aston Villa. He is very, very excited by the election, and we'll find out why in just a moment here on Talk Radio.
On DAB, online, and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio. The radio station that's always first past the post with up-to-the-minute election news, expert comment, and instant reaction. Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
Good evening. Thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight. It's Christo here on Talk Radio, giving you the chance to have your say with a special program, giving you the chance to round up what you think of the events of today. December the 12th is the early Christmas present we're all getting. That is the general election. Do you think that's a good idea to solve the problems, to solve the impasse that we are facing at the moment with Brexit? Got a great text here regarding what we think will happen with Northern Ireland during the general election. But for now, let's go to Vernon, who, you're not in Aston Villa. You're an Aston Villa fan because you've clearly called TalkSport. But you're actually in Worcester, Vernon. Evening to you.
Yeah, well, I'm actually in Poland, actually. Oh, so good evening to you.
Good Lord. So you've been in Worcester, Aston, and now Poland. But tell
well,
me...
I was in Worcester this morning, and I flew out this afternoon thinking another day, another wasted day in Parliament. And when I landed, I was greeted with the news that there's going to be an election, and frankly, I'm delighted.
Absolutely. Why do you think the election is a good idea? We've had our Brexit election in 2017, haven't we? A lot of people think that that was the election that was meant to decide who and how we were going to negotiate Brexit. The country chose Theresa May, and unfortunately we've now apparently changed our mind. So why do we need another election now when we had it in 2017?
Well, it's a bit simple, is that, you know, Theresa May was the best one in the world, not the greatest negotiator in the world. She's a reluctant leaver, and ultimately she was given the poison chalice, which it genuinely is. Even by her own acknowledgement, she's not a very good campaigner. I think my son, who's 4 years of age, would have campaigned better than Theresa May in the election. So now we've got Boris, who is an outstanding person when it comes to electioneering, campaigning, call it what you will. But ultimately, you know, on a world stage, our parliament is making us look up. How do I put it nicely on national radio? Let's just say that we are looked on in a laughable state on a world stage at the moment, the way Parliament...
But what would you say, Vernon, then, to those people that would say, well, hang on, you had your 2017 Brexit election, love or loathe Theresa May, love or loathe her negotiating style, love or loathe what she came up with, she was the Democratic leader that was democratically elected to negotiate Brexit. Why is it anyone else's fault that you have all changed your mind and that you've actually all decided actually that Theresa May, well, isn't so good and we need another election?
I don't think people have changed their mind at all.
They surely have, though, because otherwise they would have voted for Theresa May's withdrawal agreement. So they've massively changed their mind. They've decided that they didn't actually like what Theresa May came up with and they'd like another shot at a different leader to negotiate the deal. Now, that's great. I mean, I'm all for that because that's democracy. But I guess people on the Remain side might say, well, hang on, how come you guys are allowed to change your minds when it comes to who you want to be the leader negotiating Brexit, but we're not allowed to change our minds and have another referendum?
Christo, 75% of Parliament is Remain. The country voted to leave. The fact of the matter is it's impossible. The current state of Parliament, Remain control Parliament.
Democratically elected Remain control Parliament.
Yeah, they are. And now, correct. And now, after the next election, hopefully it will be not the case.
And what if you get another Remain Parliament in the next election? What are we going to do then? Decide that we don't like Boris's deal again and have another election in 2021 until you get the leader that you want?
Well, I don't think it's a case of getting the leader that we want.
Well, it is, though, because you want Boris to have a majority to negotiate a deal because Theresa May...
I want to leave.
Yes.
I want to leave. I was one of the 17.4, put simply, that won. And I just want to see it implemented.
But you had it implemented by Theresa May, though. You had it implemented by Theresa May with a withdrawal agreement.
Theresa May was... She was a Remainer, Christo.
But she was the democratically elected Prime Minister. Now, you know, it's of no consequence whether she was a Remainer or a Leaver. Firstly, the Tory party put her as leader, who are majority, you would think, for Brexit more than other parties. They made her leader. She then went to the country. The country made her leader. So what right do you have to now say that they got it wrong?
I don't have any right other than the fact that all I want to see happen is that we had a referendum, a once-in-a-lifetime referendum. The government said they would implement the outcome. Fact? Yes, it was. That's what David Cameron said. We will implement the vote. Mm. And have they implemented the vote? They haven't.
No, because people in Parliament didn't vote in favour of Theresa May's withdrawal agreement. And by the way, one of those people that didn't vote for Theresa May's withdrawal agreement, one of the people that didn't vote for Theresa May's withdrawal agreement was Boris Johnson. So had Boris Johnson and the others voted for her agreement, you'd have your Brexit now. You'd have it.
But it wasn't, but it wouldn't be, Christo, you know, you're a Remainer. The deal struck by Theresa May was Remain, put in a different name.
So you're against the deal that was negotiated by the democratically elected Prime Minister who was elected on the basis of negotiating Brexit? Sounds like you're not in favour of democracy there, Vernon.
Play with words, Christo.
It's true, though. I mean, it's fine if you've changed your mind. I'm not having a go at you, but at least acknowledge you have.
No. I haven't changed my mind one bit. If anything, I'm even more in favour than Leave than I've ever been. All I want is I'd like to get the situation done and dusted. We voted to leave, 17.4 million voted to leave, and I would like to see it done.
All right, Vernon, thank you very much indeed. Let's go to Lincolnshire and talk to Alistair. So there we go. You heard from Vernon there, Alistair. It's a great idea to have a general election. We're going to finally get the numbers in Parliament to be able to implement the democratic will of the people, that is to leave the EU. What do you make of that, Alistair?
Well, I'm a bit disappointed that we voted for an election today at the House of Parliament, because if they had voted against it, maybe there would have been Ian and Kath on tonight.
Well, I'm afraid you're stuck with me instead, so December the 12th is the election.
I've spoken to you before, Chris. You're a perfectly nice gentleman.
Thank you. Bless you.
Okay.
Now, why other than the fact that the schedule has changed, are you against a general election? Don't tell me that's the only reason.
I'm not sure that politicians have got any real power anymore, anyway.
But isn't that why we perhaps need an election? I mean, Vernon made some really good points about the fact that Parliament is, well, it's kind of in limbo. They can't really do anything at the moment. I think, as Boris Johnson said himself, that this Parliament is dead. You know, it's a zombie Parliament, I think he said. So, you know... Any book on politics you ever read in your life will say that a lack of leadership is the most terrible thing for democracy. And at the moment, we've a parliament that's in limbo. So surely, Alistair, we've got to find some way of sorting that out. And an election seems the best way, doesn't it?
Well, I guess. But the... if you look at the situation around politics at the moment, I do subscribe to the fact that I think that Jeremy was kind of pushed into agreeing it today. I actually believe that it's a big, you know, I probably ain't saying anything secret. I'm a Labour supporter, I'll say that. But I actually believe that they've shot themselves in the foot, really, because at the moment, the way that I'm picking up the atmosphere out there, I think that Boris Johnson's going to win. I think that he's going to win probably with a majority, and I think it's going to be a disaster. Having said all that, as I say, I've got separate views about the illusion of politics being kind of when everyone gets their say and it being democratic, because I believe there are powers that be above politics which actually controls kind of the world in terms of the financial situation around the world. But that's a separate issue, I guess.
All right, Alistair, thank you. That's Alistair in Lincolnshire. Well, of course, if you're just joining us, we're analysing the fact that we are getting a Christmas election. Merry Christmas, everyone. December the 12th. What a gift that is for you. Or is it? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. John Peat is the political editor of The Economist and joins us live on the line to give his analysis. Evening to you, John.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. So, an election December the 12th, a good or a bad idea for the country?
Well, I think Parliament had got to a point where it really couldn't do anything. So I think we were heading for an election at some point. I mean, Boris Johnson had lost every one of his votes except, I think, two. And we couldn't have gone on like that for much longer. But I don't know whether mid-December is the best time to be holding an election either. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses.
Why is this a better solution, or maybe it isn't, I don't know what your view is on it, than a referendum? Because a lot of people making the point tonight, which is a pretty fair point, I think, that the Remains vote could get split between the Lib Dems and Labour, the Leave vote could get split between the Brexit Party and the Tories, and we could end up with another hung parliament or a party with a very, very small majority, whereas referendum, although we might hate the idea of yet another, at least we would get a definitive answer to the question. So where do you stand on that, John?
Well, I'm slightly torn on that. I mean, I think I would accept the simple point that if your problem is what on earth do we do about Brexit, then a general election could easily not solve that problem. You know, a general election is fought on lots of other issues. You could produce a hung parliament. It's not totally clear that it will sort of deliver a result that says this is what we want to do. On the other hand, a referendum, you know, it could be very narrow. It could be a narrow vote for Remain. Many leavers would then say, well, look, wait a minute, we've had one vote, now it's a second, we maybe need a third vote. Would that really settle things itself? I think you're not in a position where there's any obvious solution that solves the problem.
And obviously The Economist looks at all different areas of the news as well as economic issues. I mean, what do you think has been the economic cost of the fact that we've been at this now for 3.5 years and we're about to enter yet another election period?
Well, look, uncertainty doesn't help. But I have to say, as a publication that supported Remain, the consequences of voting for Leave have not been as bad as many of us thought.
Yes.
You know, the British economy is holding up reasonably well. Unemployment is low. Growth has fallen back, but so it has in much of the rest of Europe. And in many ways, I'm impressed by the resilience of the British economy during this period. My worry really continues to be, during the next year or so, if we ended up in a position where we which could still happen, leaving without a deal at all, I think the consequences could be very bad. But at the moment, I'd say things look better than they might have done.
But a lot of people would say that an objection to no deal is as undemocratic as a second referendum. I mean, Article 50 states that it is you leave without a deal if you can't actually get one at the end of the negotiating period. A lot of people at the last election stood on the platform of, in fact, I think Theresa May herself might have said it a few times, no deal is better than a bad deal. So a lot of people are saying that that's moving the goalposts, and that if without no deal on the table, Well, that's one of the reasons we've been in this mess.
Well, I happen to think that, one of her mistakes was indeed to say that no deal is better than a bad deal, and I think that was a misrepresentation. We need perfectly reasonable to leave the EU. We decided to do that in June 2016. But the idea of leaving with no deal was always going to be highly damaging, and should never really have been taken seriously as an option. And I'm glad to say that I think Boris Johnson doesn't want to do that at all. The risk is that you could end up still doing it if we can't get a decent free trade deal during the next year.
Of course, when it's back in this new withdrawal agreement, isn't it, that if the transition period doesn't result in a trade deal, which of course traditionally takes far longer than the 2 years we've got within the withdrawal agreement, we could end up once again crashing out without a deal, which, you know, a lot of people think it's scaremongering, this no deal worry, but you obviously disagree.
No, I do disagree. I mean, I think leaving the EU with a deal itself could be slightly damaging, but I think with the right sort of deal, you know, we could get by. But with no deal, I think that would seriously be damaging, and I hope that during the next 12 months, whatever happens as a result of this election, we don't get back into a position where we say, actually, we're so fed up, we're going to leave with no deal. You have to find some way of doing a deal with your biggest trade partner.
Okay, John Peet, thank you very much indeed. That's the political editor for The Economist this evening. Love to know what you think of what he's had to say, and indeed what you've been hearing tonight about the fact we have this election on December the 12th. It's really difficult to say that without sounding a bit weary, isn't it? We've only just found out today, and I'm like, got this election on December the 12th. We will get more enthusiastic about this election. We've just had so many of them lately, and I'm interested to know, actually, whether that would affect the turnout as well. I either think that it's going to really galvanise and engage people to go out there and try and vote based on Brexit because you're so passionate about it, or it'll go completely the other way and everyone will say they're so sick and tired of elected representatives and the like that they will end up wanting to stay at home and putting their feet up with the lovely warm fire on. So interested to know which side you stand on that. 0344 499 1000. Interesting text here, and of course if you'd like to text the program, 87222 is who you text. Text the word talk and your message, and the text will cost you about 25p. Christo, Northern Ireland voting could be very interesting in this election. On one hand, we have the DUP, who are against Boris's deal, while on the other hand, we probably have Sinn Féin, the SDLP, and the Alliance Party, who actually secretly like it but pretend not to. There could be a move afoot where Sinn Féin let their 7 Westminster seats, which they don't take, go to the SDLP and Alliance to actually push the Boris deal through. Well, that's an interesting one. And again, it goes back to whether you agree or disagree with the contents of Boris's deal. And obviously, leaving with a deal is preferred. I've got to give Boris credit, because a lot of people didn't think that it would be a deal worse than Theresa May's, but many commentators are saying, well, actually it is worse than Theresa May's. Theresa May's kept us in a backstop. What Boris's deal is doing is actually annexing Northern Ireland, putting this border down the Irish Sea, and will probably lead to the breakup of the United Kingdom. Certainly, I could see a situation where Scotland get a second referendum, and I wonder whether that's going to be good for the UK as a whole. And of course, I'm quite sure you will have your opinion on that as well. 0344 499 1000. And maybe you think that's a price worth paying. It's certainly a conversation that we've had before, where people who are really passionate about leaving, perhaps they will think that losing Northern Ireland and Scotland is a price worth paying for England and Wales to be out of the European Union. But there are big fears about Boris's deal that we could end up in that situation. Though, of course, that's all dependent as well, regarding no deal and all of that kind of thing, whether, of course, we end up with a situation where his actual deal gets through, and whether we end up with a situation where we end up with a trade deal negotiated at the end of the 2 year period. But of course, we don't know whether that will happen, because most trade deals take far longer than that. There are so many unknown quantities to this that my personal fear is that an election isn't going to solve any of it, and that we'll end up with another hung parliament, and then what the hell will we do then? Because then we'll be, how long? 6 or 7 weeks off leaving the EU, and we'll have wasted yet another extension. I mean, okay, at least that extension will be based on a general election rather than an internal Tory party election, which is what we did with the last extension, but I'm not sure it's a great use of our time. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. We'll talk to Chris in Colchester coming up after the break, and well, he's got some views on the election and what it will solve, or indeed what it might not solve. So that is all coming up. It's Christo in for Ian and Kath tonight with a special programme giving you the chance to analyse the events in Parliament today. All of that here on Talk Radio.
On DAB, online and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio.
Results, analysis and updates from the campaigning all the way to the final count.
Wherever you stand, have your say on the nation's most outspoken radio station, Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Christo here on Talk Radio. Thank you very much indeed for your company tonight. I know you're expecting Ian and Kath, but of course the news events have overtaken things today. And of course, you may not be aware, I'm pretty sure you are, December the 12th will be the day that you and I will be going to the polls. We will have our chance to put that X in the box and decide who we would like to govern us going forward. I would say for the next 5 years, but we're not entirely sure. Now, we don't really have fixed-term Parliament Act that's worth the paper it's written on, so who knows what will happen post this election. We should probably get that one out the way first, but you and I have been analysing whether you think here on Talk Radio you think it's a good idea, whether you think an election will actually solve things, and this will be a question that we will keep returning to over the course of the programme between now and 1 o'clock, and about whether you think actually this is the solution to the problem that we're in. I'm not sure it is. I mean, a lot of the front pages that you're going to be waking up to later, I just saw a glimpse of the Express saying, you know, this will be the election where you can decide who can deliver Brexit once and for all. Well, didn't we have that election in 2017? How on earth will this be different to the election we've had before? And what do you make of those people who would potentially, who would think that you would be against democracy to want to have yet another Brexit election? You've had one in 2017. If you're not prepared to accept that result and the fact that Theresa May was put forward to negotiate that deal, well, isn't there as much of an argument that you're against democracy as there is against Remainers who want a second referendum? Let's talk to Chris, who is in Colchester. Evening, Chris.
Hiya. Yeah, I find it crazy that we're still using terms like Remainer and Leaver after 3.5 years after the referendum. It just seems mad, really. But I think...
Well, do you think that that's just a sign, though, really, Chris, of how divided the country is and how much people still see themselves in those tribes?
Well, I think it's almost by design. It's we've been in referendum mode ever since. It's, the media really hasn't stopped talking about it, and really it should have been, we should have moved on and we should be out by now a long time ago. But I think this election, you know, it might not solve the problem, but it was, I think it's certainly worth throwing the dice because we're in limbo at the moment.
But wasn't that what the 2017 election was about, throwing the device and getting us out, dice and getting us out of that limbo? And now we're 2.5 years on from that election, nearly, and we're still in the same situation. So why are we repeating exactly what we've done before to get out of the situation we're still in again?
Well, Theresa May had no reason to go for the election, I don't think. She wasn't in trouble at all, but in 2017. But the thing is, then, a lot of both on Labour and Conservatives made out that they were going to respect the result of referendum. They'd voted to trigger Article 50, that we were going to leave after 2 years on the 29th of March. You know, and the Labour Party's position was respect the result of the referendum, we'll leave the customs union, single market. And then ever since then, it's changed a lot, so much so that now they're calling for a second referendum that they're going to campaign to, well, they've done it. It's absurd. they're in clown world, the Labour Party. I mean, they spent the weekend arguing over whether giraffes are gay. 99% yes. of giraffes are gay. I mean,
yes, you did. They did. Well, only male giraffes, in fairness. They didn't think that the female ones were lesbians, yeah. in fairness. So that wasn't...
No, that's true.
So we've got to give them some credit for that, right?
Yeah, but it's absolutely bizarre. And I think they're gonna come unstuck this time because they're so divided. But the Conservative parties might do the same. But Boris, it's not a deal. It does not respect the referendum result. It doesn't get us out of the European Union and all its institutions. So it does, and their policy really hasn't changed a lot since David Cameron, where he went to the European Union in 2015 to get reforms, and his policy was to stay in the European Union in name, but opt out of bits he didn't like. Whereas now, it's to come out of the European Union in name only, and opt into bits that they want to stay in. So really, it's going from half in to half out.
But don't you think that going forward... See, what worries me, Chris, is that what is seen as the kinds of cooperation between different countries that is absolutely essential in order for us to be able to trade and prosper going forward, that in some way that's seen as some horrific, terrible, awful, sovereignty-robbing compromise, when in actual fact, in the real world, many countries compromise with each other in order to trade with each other. You know, well, going forward, a lot of countries have to give up a little bit of something, give up a little bit of sovereignty, in fact, in order to be able to get the benefits of trading going forward. It's a simple negotiation. I give up some sovereignty when I go and negotiate a new car in the dealership because I give up something in order to get something in return. So do you not think we're in danger, Chris, of any deal other than no deal being seen as a compromise or a sellout, when in actual fact it is simply what countries have to do to have good relationships going forward?
Well, no, because I think most people are for a free trade deal, and certainly there's got to be some give and take, and they give a bit, we give a bit, but Verhofstadt came to the Liberal Democrat conference the other day talking about the EU being an empire with an invading empire talk. And, we're signed up to EU Defence Union, which means our foreign policy and army will be controlled from Brussels. I didn't vote for that.
That's not true, Chris. That is absolutely not true, that the army, the UK army, would be controlled by Brussels. I mean, that's simply just not true.
And we also website, the EU Defence Union, von der Leyen, the new president.
Can you send me a link to that, Chris? Because I'm genuine. I'm not trying to sort of catch you out. I'm really interested to know that. From what I understood, any kind of talk of an EU army, we would still have our veto over, and that's why it wouldn't be something we would have participate in.
Von der Leyen is talking. She's a new president. She's talking about getting rid of the veto. So that's not going to be an option.
And why again, though, would it matter to you? Okay, that aside, let's say that it is going ahead and that you're absolutely right and that we would have no control over that. Why is it? I've never really got the argument, Chris, about the EU army, because we want to be friends with the EU. One of the reasons that the EU was formed, as well as NATO, was in order to maintain peace in Europe and for us to be reliant on each other with trade and the like, in order to make it less likely that we'd want to fight with each other in future. If we all had the same army, there would be no danger of us fighting again because we'd all be on the same side. So why does an EU army upset you so much?
Oh, well, yeah, but it's not an EU army. It's the... Every army in Europe would go by the same foreign policy, and it would be central command in Brussels. So when people say EU army, that's not quite true. But I want to be able to control that democracy is where I can control what our government does. Mm. And if Brussels is deciding that they want to go and invade this country, and there's nothing I can do about it, I know it's difficult as it is, just how the things are. But to make it even more difficult, I just don't find that acceptable, and that's not just about you know, about war either. There's a lot of things that make more difficult by being in the European Union. And, you know, we had that argument in 2016.
But surely if we wanted to take our action against, you know, one of our enemies, we would want to do that with the cooperation of the EU. And we would also have our MEPs who would be able to vote in Brussels, as well as the EU Council and the Council of Ministers, who would all have a say about who it would be that we would be invading if we indeed we chose to going forward. And, you know, we often, when we take military action, look to our European allies in order to support us in that. So surely it's just an extension of that. I still fail to see why that's not a good thing, that we would all be more cooperative when it came to defence and our armies.
Because it will be decided by people that are unelected. Like I say,
Well, they're not unelected, though. They're MEPs, Chris.
No, but they don't. They're just there to rubber stamp.
No, they're not. They're there to vote in or vote out legislation put forward by the Commission in association with the EU Council and the EU Council of Ministers, who are also, by the way, elected.
They're not elected. They're appointed.
No. The commissioners are appointed by. But there are lots of people in UK politics who are appointed that aren't actually elected, and usually it's the people who are elected that get the mandate to then appoint, which is why you've got the more democratic parts of the EU, and you've got the things like the commissioners, much like any other political system in any other country. You know, you've got people in the House of Lords who are appointed. You've got a civil list of people who are appointed. You've got lobby groups who have a huge amount of influence on legislation here in the UK, again, who aren't elected. So
But the way I'm looking, it's becoming less democratic, and we've seen the leaders of the European Union talking about forming an empire, talking about getting rid of veto power. It's getting worse. And when I listen to Yanis Varoufakis talking about what they did to Greece, and that a lot of decisions are made behind closed doors by the European Central Bank and the IMF, and what they did to Greece was just destroyed the country. I mean, but the thing is, you know, I voted to leave that institution. None of this was before where it was got so messed up like this. We leave its institutions. You know, David Cameron made it very simple, didn't he? Maybe too simple. But I just feel like we've had that argument.
Do you not accept, Chris, as well, though? And you sound like a really reasonable guy, and there are some leavers who you speak to sometimes who perhaps don't sound as reasonable as you, because surely you acknowledge, Chris, that, and I get your vote, and I get why you voted leave, and I'm totally getting your reasons why, but you must surely accept that what you were sold back in 2016 is actually far more complicated, far less simple and straightforward as you were told it would be, that actually trying to uningratiate yourself from over 40 years of institutions that we have been absolutely embedded into in order to make our lives more prosperous, and that actually that's nothing to do with people being sort of traitors. That's nothing to do with people trying to stifle democracy. It's a simple fact that it is more complicated than you were sold it was.
Well, I know, of course it is, but I barely listened. When I saw that Boris Johnson and Michael Gove were running the Leave campaign, I thought, that's it, we've lost. You know, we're not going to win. I thought Boris Johnson's a joke. I can't stand Michael Gove. I'd made my decision what I was going to do before. I'd informed myself and listened to people like Tony Benn.
But I'm talking about the mere nature of the referendum itself. I mean, the fact that it was reduced down to a binary question of, you know, leave or remain. I mean, it was so much more complicated than simply leave or remain. What is just trying to unpick years of legislation and close cooperation is now being seen as sort of, you know, that you're anti-democratic or that kind of thing, when in actual fact it just has turned out to be so much more complicated than any of us thought, remain or leave.
Yeah, I think, but, you know, Yanis Varoufakis himself had a good thing where you implement the Norway option as a implementation
interim theory
for like five 5 years because it solved the Irish border.
I mean, you're quite right, but that was something that prior to the referendum, Nigel Farage was very passionate about us going for a Norway option, but then completely changed his mind as soon as the referendum took place and started saying that that would be some sort of betrayal, when in actual fact he had sold it to Leave voters that Norway, the Norway option, was absolutely on the table for people like him. So I'm not surprised some people are quite confused by that, but I think that sounded like quite a reasonable solution, Chris. But unfortunately, you've got people like Farage and the like who would just never go for that. Gosh, you might almost think that they just want to keep themselves in the news and make themselves relevant rather than actually do what's best for the United Kingdom. But hey, what do I know? We will continue this conversation and we'll talk more to you about whether an election you're calling in your droves is a good idea or not, and all of that coming up next here on Talk Radio.
On DAB, online, and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio. Up to the minute breaking news and instant reaction on the radio station that's got everyone talking.
The manifestos, the mandates, the mother of all radio stations.
Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
Good evening to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining me tonight. It's 5 minutes past 11. It's late night across the UK. It's Talk Radio. And of course, you may be used to hearing Ian Lee and of course, the wonderful Kath at this time. But we're bringing you a special programme this evening because we're giving you the chance to analyse the events in Westminster over the last few hours, which of course have resulted in the news that you are getting your general election on December the 12th. Is that an early Christmas present for you? Well, I don't know. I don't know whether you agree it's a good or a bad thing, or more importantly, whether you think this would actually solve the problems that we're in. And I think that's the big question that you and I have got to try and get to the bottom of tonight or over the course of the next 2 hours, about whether this will actually get us any further along. From my perspective, you know, it's always great to see democracy in action, and obviously from a news point of view I love reporting on this kind of stuff, but when it comes to actually will this solve the problem, well, I've a horrible feeling we tried that before in 2017 and we ended up in this mess, frankly. And love it or loathe it, Theresa May was chosen back in 2017 to negotiate the Brexit deal, and you know, I've nothing against people wanting to change their minds if they decided that they want a new mandate for a new person to negotiate a Brexit deal. Congratulations. Well done. Though it seems a bit hypocritical that people who perhaps have changed their minds over the issue itself aren't being given a second vote. I mean, Tony Blair this weekend said that actually on the election day it should be both an election and a referendum together. I mean, what do you make of that? What do you think about that being an idea? Both an election and a referendum on the same day. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Stuart Jackson is a former MP and special advisor to, I can't actually see who you were special advisor to, Stuart. Do you mind telling me?
To David Davis.
To David Davis as well. Okay, so presumably you're thinking that today was quite a good day for the Conservatives, getting the election that they've so craved for so long.
Yes, because I think it's breaking the logjam and giving the people a final say in terms of a national election as to giving the Prime Minister a mandate to finish the job and give effect to the referendum decision of 2016, something that Parliament has been unable to do for the last 2.5 years.
And is there not a big fear, though, that this actually won't solve the problem? Again, I've seen a lot of commentators and polls today that seem to back up the idea that the Remain vote may well be split between the Lib Dems and Labour, the Brexit vote may well be split between the Tories and the Brexit Party. Is there not a real danger that we'll end up in exactly the same position as we did in 2017?
Well, I think the polling actually shows that Boris has got the broad support of what you might call the Leave Alliance. Both Leave voters from 2016 and people that say they're going to vote the Brexit Party are supporting Boris's deal. So Boris's challenge is to try and unite that group of people. The difficulty, obviously, for the Remain side is that they're all fishing in the same pond, in that they want to stop Brexit in particular ways. I mean, obviously, I believe that the benefit for the Liberal Democrats is that their policy is pretty straightforward and credible, as in they just want to rip up the mandate from 2016, which is fair enough. I wouldn't vote for it, but others would. The difficulty for the Labour Party is that their policy is incoherent and complicated. It basically says we're going to go to Brussels, strike a new deal, which the EU says is impossible, come back to the UK, have a referendum, then potentially campaign against that deal. It doesn't really make sense. And so you've got the Greens, the Labour Party, the Liberal Democrats and the Nationalist parties all saying that they're going to oppose Brexit. So you are going to have a split on that side. So in that sense, there's a kind of structural advantage for the Brexit side in the general election.
Do you think that, as a former special advisor to David Davis, do you think that he regrets some of the things that he said about Brexit over the last few years? You know, that there'll be no downside, only a considerable upside, how the EU states are very sympathetic to our view, the fact that he actually...
Well, we haven't left yet. I mean, how can you prognosticate about Brexit when we're not left? That's the whole point. I mean, he was talking about a competent government, which he was actually a part of.
Remember, no, he was Brexit secretary.
No, that's a canard. He left the government because he was kept in the dark by Theresa May, who was striking a completely different deal for which she had no mandate.
So you still think what he said in October 2016, there will be no downside to Brexit, only a considerable upside. Do you think that that's still a valid position?
Absolutely, and that's why there hasn't really been any substantial change in people saying that they support Leave vis-a-vis Remain over the last 3 years, despite the massive campaign of the establishment and various people in the media.
I believe that we can get a free trade and customs agreement concluded before March 2019. David Davis said that as well.
Well, yeah, that was perfectly possible if you had the political willpower. And indeed, Boris Johnson showed that if you had a strong position and a united cabinet, then you could do that. Because remember, people like you were saying 6 months ago, well, the EU is saying that we can't open the withdrawal agreement again and we can't look at the Northern Ireland Protocol. Both things happened.
Well, in fairness, I was saying that I wouldn't have thought that they would have given us a better deal than they did before. And as it turns out, the withdrawal agreement that Boris has negotiated is actually a worse deal than Theresa May. So I'm not surprised the EU allowed.
Absolutely not the case in any sense, is it?
I can keep these quotes coming. I am confident, this is David Davis, using the most up-to-date technology, we can get a non-visible border operational across the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. How did that work out for him?
That's exactly what Michel Barnier and Donald Trump...
Then why are we putting this border along the Irish Sea then? And why are we giving the Northern Ireland the chance to have the same customs arrangements in both the North and the South as they would with the EU? If this amazing technological border along the Northern Ireland and Ireland that David Davis himself said was possible existed, why would they need to renegotiate the withdrawal agreement? Why would they need to have done any of it if what he was saying was true?
Well, first of all, technological solutions was always possible. It's been used across the world. It's even been the subject of a detailed report by Lars Carlson for the European Parliament, who's an expert on borders. The EU themselves said it was possible. There was indeed two papers published in August 2017 when I was a special advisor, which actually talked about how we would use new technology, what we call maximum facilitation, and what became the new customs partnership, which is the basis of this new deal. But there wasn't the willpower from the British government to sit down with the Irish government and the EU to carry this policy through. And therefore, we wasted a lot of time. And now I accept that as a Conservative, that a Conservative government did that. And that's partly why Theresa May is no longer the Prime Minister and Boris Johnson has delivered a deal.
But why didn't Boris Johnson then return back to these amazing technological solutions that you're saying existed? Fine, if Theresa May was the one standing in the way of those and there was no will from her to explore them, totally accept that, but she's gone now. Boris Johnson, David Davis, all of those people could return back to these amazing technological solutions.
Because time time marched on and we didn't have the time to develop those solutions. My point is, had we had that willpower under the May government in the summer of 2017, we would have been able to develop those technological solutions, which indeed Michel Barnier said were possible.
So Theresa May preferred the backstop to the technological solutions that were available at the time that she chose not to go with?
She preferred the backstop, and she preferred essentially locking the EU into a customs the UK into the EU customs union, because she was not prepared to look at other options.
So even after the bill, the withdrawal agreement bill, had failed a couple of times, she didn't then think that she would then explore those technological solutions in order to be able to provide a solution to the backstop. She proceeded with a course of action that actually cost her her job, rather than go for the technological solutions that you're saying existed.
In essence, yes. And you only have to look and read the Anthony Seldon book, May at 10, which analyses the May premiership and is being serialized in the Times, to understand that she had many qualities, but being able to be innovative and change her mind about things probably wasn't one of them.
Well, and good job Boris can do that. It's a good job Boris is good at changing his mind, because let's not forget, he was a staunch Remainer before he knew it would be better for his political chance.
Well, he was a staunch Remainer, that's nonsense. He's always been
Would you like us to play you the audio of him actually saying that the leaving the European Union, would the European Union is an amazing institution and he wants us to remain in it? He told ITV News that. I think it was 2015 he did that.
It is an amazing institution, but the fact of the matter...
But we should be, remain a part of.
Whatever you think about it, it doesn't matter. The British people have made a decision in good faith with all the information at their disposal.
You cannot cite Boris Johnson's passion for this being an amazing way forward, when in actual fact you and I both know that he chose the Leave side based on his political ambitions rather than what was best for the United Kingdom.
You can trot out all these conspiracy theories.
They're not conspiracy theories at all.
You're projecting onto Boris. Boris led the Leave campaign. Boris won the leadership based on leading us out of the European Union if he was Prime Minister, and that's exactly what he would do. You can rewrite history.
I'm not rewriting history. I mean, are you saying that £350 million on the side of a bus that he stood in front of was something honest? Are you saying Turkey about to join the European Union, which he's since denied even saying?
No, he didn't say that. The Leave campaign specifically said it was the British government's policy that Turkey should join the European Union. That's a fact. That was
Why would Boris feel the need to then deny ever saying it then? Why would Boris feel the need to actually deny even having mentioned Turkey if he was being so honest at the time? Why did he deny afterwards?
Fox and David Cameron both confirmed that that was the British government's policy. So I don't know what you're arguing.
So why would Boris then, if it was the British government's policy and there was no problem with it, why would Boris then feel the need to deny having mentioned it after he did? What would he have to deny?
When he did deny that he mentioned it, clearly it was in the Vote Leave, it was part of the Vote Leave campaign, as other areas of policy were. But it was a fact, and it is a fact, that Turkey was a candidate for membership, and that was supported by the British government. So I don't really know what you're arguing about.
Well, I'm arguing about the fact that Boris isn't particularly honest, and I'm amazed that you don't agree that in some part that Boris doesn't really have the most honourable track record. And so it seems strange that you are so vociferous in defending the fact that he's always been a staunch Leaver, when I've given you a few examples of the fact that he's been dishonest and you don't seem to accept them.
He's not always been. I'm not saying he's the most staunch Leaver, but the fact of the matter is he led, with Michael Gove, the Leave campaign. He won the Leave campaign, and he absolutely forthright was in favour of us leaving when he sought the leadership of the Conservative Party. He's now the Prime Minister and will lead the general election campaign for the Conservative Party based on us leaving the European Union before 31st of January. Now, I don't think that you can argue that those are all facts. You can argue about what happened in the past, this idea that people were low information or they didn't know what they were voting for and this stuff. You know, we don't refight the referendum campaign again, because we've got a general election and people will bring all those issues to the fore when they make the decision.
I mean, it is a worry, though, isn't it, that the general election, in order to decide what happens with Brexit going forward, is going to end up exactly the same as the 2017 general election, which will decide what will happen going forward. I mean, we've kind of done this already, haven't we?
Do you think we should not have an election then?
I think that potentially a referendum would actually solve the problem of Brexit. Now that we know the shape of Boris Johnson's deal, I think that will provide us with the clarity that perhaps
undemocratic. You cannot.
How is more democracy undemocratic? How is more giving people the chance to vote on detail?
And it's patronising to the 33 million people that voted in good faith in 2016.
So are you saying that those 33 million people don't know more now?
Let me finish. If you willfully refuse to give effect to the decision they in good faith made in June 2016.
But we all know more than we did 3.5 years ago.
That's your opinion.
No, it's not an opinion. That's a fact.
You cannot extrapolate the reason that all those 33 million people voted the way they did.
No, but I can say as a fact that we all know more than we did 3.5 years ago, but by the mere nature of what's happened over the last 3.5 years, we all know more than we did then. Unless you're saying that 33 million people knew the intricacies of the Northern Irish border, knew about the need for regulatory alignment on the 20 points between the North and the South. They were experts on the Good Friday Agreement, experts on the protocols of withdrawing with Article 50. Are you saying that 33 million people were absolutely 100% aware of all of that? WTO rules, tariffs, all of those sorts of things, were mentioned afterwards. Then we all know more than we did 3.5 years ago. That's a fact.
I'm sorry, you didn't have to have a PhD in European Community Law in order to go to the polling
station. But those are the issues that came up since.
No, it's a canard. You had 6 months of the most intense campaign of information on television, on blogs, on magazines, on the internet, local meetings. You had £9 million leaflet from the government. You had a record turnout. Many people had never voted before. The idea that...
Well, we could thank Cambridge Analytica for that, can't we, of course?
That's another tinfoil hat conspiracy.
Oh, not right.
Completely unproven.
Oh, is it?
The fact of the matter is people went to the polling station convinced that they were voting for what they knew to be the correct decision. And it's not for you to second guess and say, we're going to set aside that decision because we, the people who are high information, who know more than you, decide you have to have another referendum until you get the right
result. Well, unfortunately, what is being offered now bears absolutely no relation to what was being offered prior to 2016. And so I don't think that it's a problem at all. And as someone who is democratic, I don't see how it's a problem at all that now we have the clarity and a deal that is in black and white from Boris Johnson. What have you got to fear by going back to the people and saying, well, this is the deal that is actually going to take place. It's not going to be the easiest trade deal in history. We're not going to be holding all the cards, as was said before the 2016 referendum, but this is the actual deal in place versus Remain. So now we know way more than we did then. Here's your chance to confirm whether you actually want it or not. And if so many people are in favour, I don't see why that's a problem to do that.
Because Remain cannot be an option because the people voted to leave.
Well, democracy didn't end in June 2016. In fact, David Davis himself says that the moment someone can't change their mind, we cease to be a democracy. I mean, I think that's another David Davis quote I could give you.
Decide a referendum. If you look at the Welsh Assembly referendum to set up the Welsh Assembly in 1997, that was decided by 50.1% of the vote on a low turnout of about 40%. Mm-hmm. Are you now saying that because not many people voted there and it was only won by 0.2% over the No campaign, that we should get rid of the Scottish Assembly, the Welsh Assembly?
I think if there is a real will for them to vote again in another referendum, then absolutely, I think they should be given the chance to, if enough of people have changed their minds. If more detail comes to light on the relationship between Wales and the rest of the United Kingdom, and that causes people to want to vote again, then absolutely. I mean, we're having another general election when we've had one about Brexit before. I don't see how you could be against a referendum, certainly when you seem so confident that the Leave side would win.
No, I never said the Leave side would win. As it happened, I think they would win. But I think it would be the first, it would be completely the case that it was the first referendum, the first substantive vote in British history, which was effectively ignored. Because, let's be honest, people like you are not interested in democracy and people knowing everything and having perfect knowledge of the political system. You just want them to vote again to get the right result.
So people like me, Mr. Jackson, people like me are against democracy, though you've just spent the last 5 minutes telling me why we shouldn't have another referendum, i.e. more voting
for
people.
Because we're going to have a general election, and these issues will be decided in a general election, along with social care, transport, education, health.
Mm.
You know, people will be able to discern the differences in policies. But ultimately, it's about the importance of democracy. That's not about leave or remain anymore. It's about whether the establishment has decided that it will agree with, it will allow a democratic decision taken by the British people to have effect. Now, I believe it should be absolutely appropriate for people to decide, once we've left the European Union, that they wish us to rejoin. And I would be perfectly happy to fire a referendum on that in 5, 8, 10 years' time. But you cannot ignore the decision that people did vote to leave in 2016.
Okay, Stuart Jackson, who is the former MP and former special advisor for David Davis, thank you very much indeed for joining us this evening. So what do you make of all of that? Will this solve the problem? 0344 499 1000, an election versus a referendum. That's what Tony Blair came up with. Which do you agree with more? 0344 499 1000 is the number to call here on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
As the nation gets ready to go to the polls, don't miss Talk Radio's dedicated election coverage. Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
That's exactly what it is, a countdown to the general election. And it's whether you think it's a good idea or not, really. I'm not entirely sure I do, as you've probably gathered in the last half an hour or so, because I'm not sure it's actually going to solve the problem. And I'm worried that the Brexit that is being offered bears absolutely no relevance to the Brexit that was being offered prior to 2016. And so it's an interesting one, really. And I'm not sure whether it's actually going to, like I say, solve any of the problems that we're facing as a nation. But what do you think? 0344 499 1000. And as always, I really like it when you tell me why I'm wrong. You do it quite often, which is fine. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call. Let's get through some of more of the other calls that are coming in this evening, and let's go to Rochdale and say good evening to Kyle. How are you, Kyle?
Hi, Christo. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm all right. I think I might. I'm not ringing up for an argument, which might be strange.
Good. I'd quite like us not to have an argument, because I'm so sick of us all arguing about everything all of the time, Kyle. Though it is quite difficult with some people not to have a bit of a Barney.
Well, and it's difficult, and I know that I shouldn't really reference the previous call, because he's not.
Well, no, it was a former. In fairness, it was a former MP and advisor to David Davis, who seemingly didn't like it when I read back David Davis quotes to him.
No, it's very strange, because I did see there was the Channel 4 documentary, not the excellent drama docu about Dominic Cummings, but there was a recent one. It was only a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you saw it, when it was featuring, I think it was just before Anna Soubry had left and joined the independent group, and David Davis was in there, and Nicholas Soames and people. It was charting them over a year, I think, or since January. And Davis didn't. He seemed quite chilled about the whole thing and laughing, and, you know, like I said, he can use any quote.
Well, it just seems really odd that David Davis apparently had this Northern Irish border up-to-date technological solution, and he had it up his sleeve for all that time, and apparently Theresa May knew about it but chose not to pursue it in order to pursue a backstop that ultimately got her losing her job, even though she knew she'd lose her job over the backstop, but she still chose not to go for these technological solutions. And now Boris is in, and even Boris isn't going for those technological solutions that apparently still exist. And you'll forgive me if I'm sceptical that those solutions apparently exist, because if they did, I'm quite sure that they would have been used rather than us being involved in a backstop or a border down the Irish Sea. But hey, what do I know about these things? Perhaps they've been locked away in a vault somewhere, and these technological border solutions are somewhere, we just don't know where they are yet.
I just think it's strange, because from the minute the, and again, cards on the table time, you know, I was a Remainer. I would never change my mind about Remaining or staying, but, and I think you touched on it as well. I've studied politics, I was first interested quite geekily in about 1987, when I was 13. I might call a lot of the elections right. What I just don't understand is, I don't understand what people are afraid of, instead of, you know, why not put it to the people? And the other thing about the things like the technology, I seem to recall from 2016, Mr. Cameron upped on his heels and left. Theresa May was like the... Well, to be honest, the worst of a bad bunch, really, after Andrea Leadsom stood down. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why more time... Because there seemed to be a lot of messing around before anything was actually done. And things like the technical
I don't think we've used our time in the best way. But what would you say, though, Kyle? Because I do understand the argument from some people that would say, well, look, hang on, you cannot have another referendum because we had the referendum. And yes... The goalposts might have moved. Yes, you were promised unicorns, and in actual fact, you're getting a lame dog that's dead in the corner. But that was what was decided. That was the democratic mandate of the people. And we cannot then change our minds until we have at least attempted to implement the will of the people from 2016. So what would you say to that, Kyle?
No, well, I would generally tend to agree with that. I remember a friend of mine who was also a Remainer. He said, a big football fan. He was like, you can't keep playing to get the result you want unless you're Man United. Sorry.
In fairness, we all, that's exactly what happens in football, isn't it? That you sort of have a game and then you have another game and then you have another game and you keep going because then the next year, if you don't win, you get another chance because you try again. You don't play the FA Cup finals in like the year 2019 and then never play them again because Man United have won and that's it, and anything that is against that would be anti-democratic towards Man United. No, you keep playing.
And I totally get that. And even like that, even now, I still think leaving is a really bad idea. I'm sort of coming to the idea, leaving is, I still wouldn't like to leave. However, just give us all the facts. I don't see what they're afraid of. I think the upcoming election, which we clearly need, because everything is sort of gridlocked at the minute, all I think it will do, and my prediction is, it will lead to another hung parliament, and I think the sort of temperature is boiling over even more now. And it's just, you know, just the people sharing each other on the streets. And I think to me, maybe on talk radio, actually, at the weekend said, it's become like a religion. I've never known anything like it, where there's no sort of middle ground. It's either yay or nay. And it's either you're either with us or against us. Well, and I think that's a really decisive thing.
It is. And I think what's happened is, you're right, there is no middle ground anymore. And I think the other real issue is that... You know, you heard me putting to that last caller the quotes, direct quotes from David Davis that he'd said prior to the referendum. And inevitably, it ended up being, you're against democracy, you are anti-democratic to me, and against the will of 17.4 million people. And I'm not. If we could be presented with a deal that remotely resembles what people were promised prior to 2016, I'd be in favour of us just getting it over and done with. However, that's not what's happened, and it's not anti-democratic to point out that the deal that is being offered now is a pile of pants. It's not anti-democratic to say, actually, I think no deal is a really bad idea and we need to exercise caution. Now, that doesn't mean you're against Brexit. That doesn't mean you're against Leave people actually having the chance to have their mandate fulfilled. You are just pointing out that there might be pitfalls along the way, and that's just normal, moderate, reasoned way of doing things. But unfortunately, it looks like that's gone out the window. And it happened in Parliament just a couple of weeks ago. Michael Gove, when no deal was firmly on the table, was asked by another MP, quite legitimately, about the plans and safeguards that were in place for a no-deal Brexit. And immediately she got a reply from Michael Gove that it was the will of the people and it was anti-democratic and 17.4 million people, all of this meaningless sound bites that get wheeled out, rather than actually responding to what the plans were for no deal. And we're in a really dangerous place because of that, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like I said, what I don't understand, as you write, in any sort of democracy, in any sort of... I touched on this before, but what I don't understand is, if this new deal is wonderful, and let's be honest, it's not, in my opinion, personal opinion, but what I don't understand is, why are people so objecting to scrutiny of it? What's the issue?
Because it is obvious that any form of us leaving the European Union, certainly in the short term, is going to be more damaging than us remaining. And that is, mm-hmm. It's so obvious. Otherwise, why would Boris and the like be against scrutiny? Why would any of them not want that level of debate about the deal and the like? And the reason is because, as I said, it is blatantly obvious that any form of us leaving will not be as prosperous as us remaining. Now, that's fine. If you voted for that knowing that and you thought, you know what, I'm happy to take a hit in the short term because I think the benefits of leaving long term will be better for us, then I get it, but you must have a crystal ball, because that was in no way what you were told would happen prior to 2016. You weren't, yeah, I mean, you'll have noticed that most of those promises about us being more prosperous and all those sorts of things have been quietly dropped now. It is literally just the only argument that most people on the Leave side have is that people voted for it, rather than any of the arguments about prosperity or anything that were presented prior to the referendum. And as I said, that's fine if you voted knowing that it wouldn't be as good a deal as remaining. But my fear is that there's a little bit of rewriting of history going on here. And actually, people voted for something better. And now, unfortunately, they've had to convince themselves that they were actually voting for something worse. Otherwise, they'd have to admit that they made a mistake or that they were duped.
Well, and it also feels like a shade of the Emperor's New Clothes. Well, it's like we've got to carry on in this. I think, I can't remember which minister said it, like a calamitous path of self-harm. And it seems we're on that. And, you know, there's no shame in admitting that you're wrong or wanting to study the details. And I have said to Moscow, a lot of people, a lot of my friends in Rochdale, which amazes me, voted to leave. And I was like, right, okay. And I've always said, I'll be the first one. So if we get the Brexit deal through, I'll be the first one. If in 12 months' time, you know, life is, as you said, full of shiny unicorns and this, that, and the other, and, you know, we've never been so well off without the European Union. I'll be the first one to say, you know what? I was wrong. I completely misjudged it. You were right. And to be honest, Christoph, I just cannot see it happening.
Do you know, Kyle, I get where you're coming from, because I would love to be wrong on all of this. I would love to believe in the sunny uplands and WTO and all of these things that are wheeled out. But it's really difficult to do that. Kyle, I really appreciate your call. And indeed, as always, 0344-499-1000. You may disagree with what you've heard. You may want to ring and put me in my place, because I'm really not right in what I'm saying. And let's not forget as well the original question about whether we believe a general election will solve where we are at the moment. I'm not sure it will, but let's find out what the former Labour advisor Kevin Moore has to say about that. He joins us live on the line. Evening to you, Kevin.
Good evening.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. Why has it taken so long for Labour to agree to this election?
I think part of this is the parliamentary gamesmanship about Brexit. But of course, I think Jeremy Corbyn and his top team will have been champing at the bit for some time to have this election. I think they want to test their mettle again with the Conservatives. I think there's a profound sense of optimism that followed the 2017 general election, which you will recall, of course. Corbyn went into it 20 points behind at the start of the campaign. It was going to be an absolute bloodbath. Hands up, myself included, people saying this is going to be an absolute unmitigated disaster. And lo and behold, of course, by the end of it, the result was anything but a disaster. Labour was up 9.5 points, 800,000 votes roughly off winning the general election and won net 30 seats. Now, of course, that's not great. Labour still lost an election in 2017. And has been out of office now for 9 years. But there was a sense that on a prospectus that was genuinely very radical, on a prospectus led by a man who has faced incredible amounts of criticism from the British media, that even with those headwinds, Labour kind of got into a pretty decent position in 2017. I think there's a sense of, you know, perhaps one more tilt at this, that there's a sense that Boris Johnson, I think, is eminently beatable, that his kind of media persona does not necessarily transcend SW1, and that actually out in the country is nowhere near quite as popular as he would be with sections of perhaps London opinion. So I think all those things actually they've been championing at the bit. But of course, what they've tried to do is also reconcile within the Labour Party some competing demands about making sure that there's no prospect of a hard Brexit. And Corbyn was very quick this morning to point out that his kind of preconditions for agreeing to an election have been met with obviously the extension of Article 52 for 3 months. So that's kind of off the table for now.
But a lot of people would say, though, that although getting no deal off the table was a great thing in principle for many people on the Remain side of the argument, the real reason that Jeremy Corbyn has been so hesitant is the fact that he is, I think today it was 13 points behind in the polls, which, granted, is less than he was behind Theresa May. And obviously he had a better showing against her than was expected. But 13 points behind Boris Johnson, I mean, that cannot be a particularly positive place to be starting an election campaign, can it?
I think everybody would agree on that point, to be honest. I think it's not ideal. Let's put it like that. I think there's a sense that we're in kind of slightly uncharted territory in British politics these days. Things were impossible to contemplate perhaps 5 or 6 years ago, now seem to be quite commonplace. And there's huge oscillations in public opinion and there are so many variables that it's very, very hard to read. And you know, for those of us that kind of are in the soothsaying business, you know, we risk ridicule seemingly on a daily basis these days by making
predictions. But do you think that Mr. Corbyn regrets having such a well, in fairness, I think he must have had splinters in his backside, the amount of fence-sitting he did over Brexit, for certainly the pretty substantial period after the referendum. You know, I think his strategy was to sort of please everyone, and he ended up pleasing no one. And now he's sort of got this strange policy that he'll renegotiate a new deal, but he's not sure whether that new deal he'll negotiate, he'll actually back at a second referendum, which he's promised, because he'll have to put that to the Labour Executive Committee. But then they may well back that deal. They might not, but it will be a second referendum after they've renegotiated. I mean, you know, that is not really sort of election gold dust, is it?
It's not. That does take some explaining and some finessing. I'll grant you that. I think the reality is that both main parties are, as they always have been, are coalitions of interests with people within those parties that may radically disagree with people, you know, even within their own party and their own movement. And you know, Jeremy Corbyn, I think, recognises that, yes, Labour is instinctively a party of Remain, instinctively a party of Europe, and 2/3 of Labour Party voters voted to remain in the European Union in June 2016. But that still leaves a third that didn't. There's 100 parliamentary seats held by the Labour Party that voted by a majority to leave the European Union. And some of those, and I live in the north of England, and believe me, I'm surrounded by places that voted 60, 70% to leave the European Union. And what's happened is that the MPs who often sit in those seats have kind of kept their own counsel for the last 2 or 3 years. But when you talk to them privately, what they say is, look, we don't want a second referendum because, one, we'll be punished for that by our own electors, and two, we think we would lose it. You know, we would, if there's a second referendum, that we would lose it, that we'll return the same result again. So I think what Corbyn's trying to do is, in a very Blairite sense, is try and articulate a third way, which is to try and keep together this Labour coalition in the same way that, in a sense, Boris Johnson is being a bit reckless in damaging the Tory coalition. But he's trying to keep together this Labour coalition and say, look, let's concentrate on some of the other issues where we do agree. There's lots of social and economic policies where we do agree, and let's try and get past Brexit and manage it into a siding. Now, the proof of the pudding in this election campaign, and the big imponderable, is how much will Brexit dominate this campaign? There's an assumption that, of course, this is a proxy for Brexit, that it's going to be all about Brexit again. But let's see what happens when this campaign gets started, because I think what Corbyn, and I think what Corbyn is probably right about, is that actually lots of people on the doorstep will be more bothered about some of the sort of, you know, some of the bread and butter political issues that are still there and people are still concerned by. And that, I think, plays very much to his strengths, because Labour's got obviously some very radical positions, which, you know, there's questions about perhaps some of the financing of some of these commitments, but they are genuinely quite popular on the doorstep. And I think that was one of the big takeaway lessons of the 2017 campaign, that Labour's prospectus, radical though it was in fact very popular as a retail offering. It was very straightforward, and I think we'll see that again from Labour in this election campaign, and let's see how much Brexit dominates it or whether actually there's a resumption to more familiar knockabout politics.
However, bearing in mind that we've had a hung parliament for the last two and a half or so years, bearing in mind we've had a government that has not delivered the Brexit that they promised that they would, bearing in mind that we've seen defections from the Tory party, we've seen by-elections that have been lost, we've seen the whip removed from Tory MPs, granted it was re-given back to them today, there must be moments as a former Labour advisor that you and your colleagues look out of the window staring into the distance thinking, my word, if we actually had a leader who people found more popular, we would be riding high in the polls going into this election. I mean, who would be your fantasy Labour leader over Jeremy Corbyn going into this?
That's a very good question, to which I don't have a very good answer, I'm afraid. I think the reality is, you know, both main parties are coalitions of broad interests, and what Brexit has done is to sort of force them to kind of turn in on themselves and actually to recognise, if you're in the Tory party, that the Brexiteers are in the ascendant, if you're in the Labour party, the Remainers are in the ascendant. But there are still huge chunks of both of those parties that feel very differently to the leaderships of those parties. And you know, managing and synthesising these competing strands of opinion, you know, is incredibly difficult. And it's very difficult for Theresa May and for Boris Johnson latterly. It's very difficult for Jeremy Corbyn, or frankly, anybody else that would replace Jeremy Corbyn. This is not straightforward. A third of Labour voters voted for Brexit, and as I say, you know, the further away you are from the capital into the Labour heartland in the Midlands and in the north of England, the harder that Brexit opinion actually is. So I don't think necessarily it's a bad strategy for Corbyn to try and say, look, I can't reconcile this. I can't deliver a single position that's going to please everybody in the Labour Party, in my parliamentary party, or every Labour voter. What I can do, though, is to try and talk past it and hope that actually, as the campaign evolves, that this gets a better hearing than, and people get sick and fed up of Brexit and actually want to talk about the economy and pensions and retirement ages and funding for the NHS and all those issues where actually Labour plays to its strengths.
Yes, however, Labour hadn't won an election until it moved to centre ground for many, many, many years. And are you really saying that a policy of nationalisation, a policy of higher taxes, a policy of right to buy for private tenants, which, you know, many people would, you know, say was akin to a communist land grab. I mean, do you really think that the electorate want those sorts of socialist leaning policies of the 70s that...
But I mean, I suppose where we are, I mean, the thing with the centre ground is on casters at any one time, and it moves depending on the slope of the battlefield.
Yes, but you accept that Labour have moved further left as the Tories have moved further right.
Absolutely, but I mean, so is the general public in many respects. If you're one of our benighted railway services in this country, commuting into London or you try and travel between Manchester and Liverpool, the first rail line in the world, it takes as long today to travel between those cities 35 miles apart as it did in 1836. It's no better than it was then. So I think there's a sense of frustration that many, many people share, a sense of frustration with social and economic inequality. You don't have to believe everything Jeremy Corbyn or John McDonnell say or believe, but they are playing to something that resonates much, much wider than the Labour tribe from which they spring. There is the sense of look, you know, things have kind of got out of balance too much. Young people struggle to get on the housing market, clambered with debt and all the rest of it, and that there should be some reckoning for that. And I think that message, that very broad message, does resonate deep within the kind of middle England heartlands that at one time would have perhaps run a mile from somebody like Jeremy Corbyn or John McDonnell or some of these prescriptions, as you point out. But as I say, the centre ground is on casters and it does move. And I don't necessarily think that Boris Johnson's got a great sense of where it is either. I think what this election will be, so it'll be absolutely fascinating for all of us watching it, because I think it will ebb and flow. I think you know, Labour's position will get better as this campaign goes on. The Tory position will get worse, but you know, I think really this is Boris Johnson's election to lose. I think that's very, very clear given the state of the polls and the state of, I think, where the country is.
I mean, I take your enthusiasm, and I accept that there is, you know, some enthusiasm there, but I think a lot of people would be saying if Jeremy Corbyn couldn't win against the you know, charisma void that was Theresa May, I'm not sure that when it comes to Boris, who, you know, I've real concerns over his honesty, but he's got charisma in buckets. I'm not sure we're going to see Corbyn prosper in those circumstances.
I suspect Boris's camp tonight have an element of trepidation as they're planning the election campaign. And they're a little bit like Anthony Joshua's team, where they're looking at somebody like Andy Ruiz and thinking, on paper, we should beat this guy hands down. It was a fluke last time. Our guy is better honed, he's better trained, he's going to go out there and do the business. But I think they will have a seed of real genuine doubt that just as Andy Ruiz had a great knockout punch against Anthony Joshua, that Corbyn could actually bring a few surprises during this election campaign as well. He's a good natural campaigner as well. He comes across great on TV. And I think as this campaign gets on, I think the tables will slope and things will even up, and then things get interesting.
Well, you know what? He may well provide Boris Johnson with that right hook. I just hope he doesn't nationalise it first. Kevin Marr, thank you very much indeed. That's the former Labour advisor. So this hour, of course, we've had a former Conservative and former Labour advisor giving their opinions. What about some of yours? 0344 499 1000. A few people texting and tweeting telling me why I'm wrong. Well, do it on the phone instead. It'll be far more fun for you to tell me all the reasons why perhaps I've got a bit of a negative view of things going forward. Very difficult not to after 3.5 years. So call and tell me here on Talk Radio.
On DAB, online and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio.
The radio station that's always first past the post with up-to-the-minute election news, expert comment and instant reaction.
Countdown to the general election.
Order!
On Talk Radio.
Yes, it is the countdown to the general election. It's difficult not to say that without having a little either laugh or a small sob to yourself. Because, yes, more voting coming your way, more democracy. Do you ever think we'd be in a situation in this country where we've said that we've had enough? There's been too much voting, too much democracy. 0344 499 1000 if you'd like to join the conversation on this and about whether you believe a general election will solve the problem. And well, Angela's been trying to call, by the way. Oh, she's on the board. She tweeted me to say she's not been called back. Angela, you're on the board. We'll get back to you a little bit later on. And of course, I should say as well, if you were expecting or used to hearing Ian Lee at this time, well, we're bringing you the chance for a special programme tonight to have your say, really, on everything that's been happening and whether you think this is an election that will solve all our problems or whether this is an election that will potentially bring more problems on. I mean, I think we can all agree, whatever side of the Brexit debate you're on, whatever side of the election debate that you might be on, whatever party you support, we cannot go into another 3.5 years of this. We really can't. We cannot have, you know, it's going to be 2020 in a, you know, 6 or 7 weeks time. And we voted in 2016. Now, you know, many of you might say it's because Remainers tried to stop the vote happening and the vote being implemented. Remainers would say, well, no, Leavers sold unicorns. And as I said, we ended up with a pile of a dead dog in the corner instead. You know, I think you'll find 6 of 1 and 6 of 1 of the other as to who people believe are to blame for this. Either way, it just can't go on, can it? Something has got to change. So I think I'm almost finding myself, whatever side of the debate you might be on, just someone's got to win the election so that we can get something done. Whether that be Remain or Leave, just something. Something to stop this ridiculous limbo that we're in. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call on this one. Now, do you know what's brilliant? Can I tell you something that's hilarious? And I shouldn't laugh, but I'm getting so many tweets from someone who is being quite insulting, actually. And what is this Ramona doing in the Ian Lee slot? Get him off. You know what his Twitter handle is? Positive mentor, volunteer and life coach. Who's this Ramona? Get him off. So, thank you. I think you need to be working a little bit on your positive mentorship and your life coaching, because at the moment, if I were to face you for mentorship or life coaching, it would be likely I'd throw myself off the roof of this building. Some more tweets coming in at the moment as well, and some of you saying it's a very, very good idea. Dave, everything that can be said about the general election 2019 has already been said over the next 6 weeks. Very, very true. I think that we've all had what we've got to say. Presenter on now is a total London-centric Remainer, says John. Keep UK a province of Greater Germany. I don't believe I ever said that. The federal EU prize cash cow. Will he still spout such nonsense in a post-Brexit UK? I don't know. I drive a Volkswagen. What does that mean? Before that, I had a Mercedes. Oh, my God. I should change my surname to Merkel, shouldn't I? I'm a German. I never knew. I had absolutely no idea whatsoever. Honestly, I should spend less time in the Volkswagen, shouldn't I? Honestly. So anyway, I'll be back in just a few moments here on Talk Radio. Alfida Zane.
On DAB, online, and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio. Up-to-the-minute breaking news and instant reaction on the radio station that's got everyone talking.
The manifestos, the mandates, the mother of all radio stations.
Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Christo here on Talk Radio. How are you? Thank you very much indeed for your company. I know that you were expecting to hear Ian Lee with the fabulous Kath, and they'll be back tomorrow night. Well, unless there is probably an amazing political development overnight, which I probably doubt. I think a general election is about as serious as it gets. They should be back tonight from 10 o'clock. And, of course, we've been talking. My name's Christo, by the way. Hello. And you and I have been discussing why a general election is or isn't a good idea, and whether you think a general election will actually solve the Brexit dilemma that we're facing and that we have been facing for 3.5 years. 0344 499 1000. And I'll remind you of where I stand. You know, voting is never a bad thing. Democracy, never a bad thing. However, my big fear is that actually we're not going to end up with a solution to the Brexit dilemma as a result of this election, and it's going to end up being as much of a waste of time as the 2017 election. And yet another extension that's been offered up by the EU will end up being wasted. Christian Woolmer is a former Labour parliamentary candidate and joins me live on the line. Good morning to you, Christian.
Good morning.
In what way will a general election solve the Brexit dilemma that we're in?
Well, I'm afraid that I'm right with you here. I suspect that the big Tory lead that there is at the moment in the polls will not materialise in real votes, and that we will end up with a situation not unlike the one that we have. And therefore, it will be very difficult to resolve the Brexit dilemma.
However, the one thing we don't have in this election, which we did in the last one, was the... I think she had quite a tough time, and history will be kind when they look back on her, but the personality vacuum, unfortunately, that was Theresa May. Whereas in this one, you've got Boris Johnson, who is oozing charisma. Surely Jeremy Corbyn, starting off 13 points behind Boris, which I think the latest polls said today, must be absolutely dreading this campaign, being up against someone like Boris over Theresa May. I mean, if you can't win over Theresa, how is he going to win over Boris?
Boris has not performed well since he's become Prime Minister. He doesn't have the right character for it. He can't deal with real people. He can't deal with press.
I think that we're having a little bit of trouble with the line there, so we're going to have to leave it with Christian. We'll try and see if we can get you on a better line. If not, we'll come back to some of your calls. But I think the gist of what Christian was saying there was, look, you know, Boris has not performed in the way in which he has prior to him becoming Prime Minister. And actually, I'm inclined to agree with that. I think Boris is a brilliant politician, and he's brilliant in interviews. He's very charismatic. I don't trust a word that comes out of his mouth, but then there aren't that many that I do trust. But I think that he will be a formidable campaigner. I really do. And I think that he's going to give certainly Jeremy Corbyn a real run for his money. I think a lot of people as well are going to be concerned about the issues aside from Brexit. And you know what as well, bearing in mind that this election will be fought on many issues aside from Brexit, if you want to give us a call this morning and tell me on 03444991000, what is the number one priority that you will be voting on? The number one thing, if you had a list, the top 10 things that would make you get up out of your lovely comfy sofa and stroll down to the polling booth in freezing cold December weather, what is that issue? And now, I don't mind if it's Brexit, but obviously it'd be really great to think that actually we're voting on other things. And I think that's where, again, Jeremy Corbyn potentially might come a bit of a cropper, because I think a lot of people worry about the money it's going to cost to nationalise everything. But then, again, talking about money, how much has Boris suddenly found down the back of the sofa in order to bribe us all with NHS spending and education spending in order to make it seem like Brexit is not quite the economic disaster that many people are predicting it may well be? But again, as always, challenge me and tell me why I'm wrong. 03444991000. Let's go to Washington, not America, and talk to Brian. How are you, Brian?
Good evening. Hey, Chris Paul. I've got a couple of points I want to make.
Of course.
First of all, we've had 10 years of Tory terror, right?
Tory terror.
Yeah, honestly, we have. It's just been like a Halloween horror for the last 10 years of all this austerity, and I would love to see Boris and his gang chucked out. I really would.
In fairness, Brian, though, there is a very strong argument to say that there would never have been a need for austerity had Labour managed the economy up until the global financial crash a little better. I mean, Britain was booming in the early years of this century, and yet the deficit and the debt didn't really reduce during those very, very prosperous years. So isn't there an argument to say that the austerity was necessary due to, partly, not wholly, but partly due to the failings of Labour?
Yeah, but the problem was, though, cause, I mean, I'm not a wizard about when it comes to finances, but wasn't Lehman Brothers or somebody, Goldman Sachs, you know, the huge financial crash, I mean, across America affected the rest of the world. I mean, it wasn't really something that the Labour Party had control over.
No, but they have control in preparing for economic times that are tough. I mean, everyone, I think, prior to 2008, perhaps I absolutely accept the scale of the global financial crash was not as, could not be predicted, but certainly the credit crunch, the fact that we were all spending too much money, that there was potentially something on the horizon which was going to lead to us needing to tighten our belts, that was reported extensively prior to 2008. And I think that a lot of people would perhaps be annoyed, I think, with Labour for not perhaps spending some of the money that they were getting in all of that prosperous and really, you know, during those economically times where Britain was booming, our GDP was really high, you know, everything was rosy, and they didn't put anything aside during those times.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from on that point.
But anyway, so 10 years of the Tories, we've had the austerity within the coalition, and then we've had a majority with the Tories for a short period of time. Then we had the hung parliament after 2017. Now we're in 2019, and you're right, we will be about 5 or 6 months off a decade of Tory rule.
Yeah, I want to see a change. I think most people do. Do you know what gets me mad, though? This will make you laugh, Christo, I'm sure. You're at work, right? If you decided you weren't going to go to work, and you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense that, you know, the DUP, they're not at work, it's Stormont, that's the MLAs. They're still getting paid wages when they're not even, they've been off for about, what, 1,000 days? And they are still getting paid wages for not actually doing anything, and there's no administration in Northern Ireland. Nothing's getting done. How are this? Sammy Wilson and the Eileen Foster and all the rest of the crew over there, how come they're still getting paid wages when they're not actually in work? That doesn't make sense to me. If you're not working, you shouldn't be getting paid.
So what kind of change would you like? You said that you think it's time for a change. It's been 10 years of the Tories. I mean, is Corbyn the saviour in your mind? Or would it be perhaps a lot of people are speculating that this election will see a real surge in those smaller parties, you know, the SNP doing better than it is at the moment, the Lib Dems gaining ground, possibly even Change UK, possibly even independence as well. So is that the kind of change you want to see, or is it a full-on Labour government, for instance?
Yeah, obviously the Brexit thing, obviously if we can get that done, I would like to have Labour back in. Some of the policies I don't agree with, but I really am, like, keen to sort out the poverty situation. We've got food banks, we've got bedroom tax needs to be abolished, we've got, you know, this horrible benefit system that they've got now. What's it called again? The
economy? Universal credit.
Yeah, to me, people are really living and struggling. And this, I'm just thinking about all the single mothers out there who are really struggling. They've got three or four kids to deal with. And they can only claim for two children. I think it's kids deserve, you know, we're kind of taking out on children. I think we need to get these damn Tories out and get Labour in.
Is there an argument, though, Brian, to say that perhaps if there is that parent that has three or four children, and I take what you're saying, that we don't want children to suffer, but how do we make people make more responsible decisions regarding their parenting without perhaps restricting the amount of money that we give in child benefit? For instance, most people I know who are, you know, friends and relatives of mine only have one or two children, and those are people in work because they genuinely can't afford to have any more, maybe three at most. So obviously, it seems a little bit unfair that perhaps some people who don't work that hard do have more than two or three children. How would you stop people bringing children into the world that they can't afford to keep if you weren't going to get rid of the government subsidy for those children?
Yeah, I still think, to be honest, it's a difficult one to answer, Crystal, because obviously usually it's the mothers who are stuck with the children, guys, you know, make women pregnant and send them just do off, and then the mothers are the ones who are carrying their baby, so to speak. So it's not their fault. But you can't have children like the Victorian times walking the streets with, like,
no, but it's both their faults, because there are more than enough ways in which two people can enjoy each other's company without a child turning up. You know, I love the two producers that I have behind the glass at the moment, and I love their company, but I can guarantee you that us spending time together will not result in the birth of a child, as much as I might try. So, I mean, the point I'm making is that, you know, there are many things that you can do to not have a child, and if you do choose to do the thing that does produce a child, you can take precautions in that way. And how can we?
Absolutely. I mean, we're all people are educated today. Goodness sakes, people should know, you know.
Exactly. And so I take your points, Brian, and I really appreciate them. Let's just do a quick tweet. Paul, I asked you, what will be the one issue that will get you out of your lovely, warm and cozy home and get yourself down to the polling booths on this December 12th date that we've been offered for this election? Paul says, the chance to destroy Jeremy Corbyn and Labour is all it takes to get me out in the dark depths of December to vote at the booth. Corbyn is finished. Paul, really appreciate that tweet, but tell me then, is there not a part of you that worries that this was the kind of thing that was said back in 2017 against Theresa May? Strong and stable Theresa May. You know, we all were looking forward to someone perhaps with a little less charisma after David Cameron and Tony Blair, all spinning and slimy. And, well, he didn't manage to beat her. So, but he did do very, very well. He did do far better than was thought. Didn't win the election, but he did far better. So is there not a part of you that is a little bit worried about that? The amount of younger voters he's resonating with. Interesting to see what you think of that one. Angela has given us a call in Leicester. How are you, Angela?
Hi, Christo. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Nice that you've been tweeting me this morning. And, well, you said in your tweet, I don't think it'll solve anything on the subject of the election. I mean, surely it's going to give us a bit more clarity, in as much as at the very end of it, we'll either have a winner or if it's a hung parliament, we'll have confirmation that the country's really divided and doesn't know what it wants. Either way, it's an answer of sorts, isn't it?
Well, I feel a bit let down. I'm 56 now, and I voted for, I did vote for Labour when I was very young, but as you get older, you change your vote. But, I feel that I've been saying it, a lot of people are saying it's checkmate, isn't it? It's a game of chess. If we look on the building, it looks like a chessboard, doesn't it? But, I don't know. But, We vote on a Thursday, so there's no excuse because it's like the library for us in the morning. That's part of my group anyway. So, but I don't know.
I mean, what will be the one issue, Angela, that you're going to vote for? What are you going to actually... let's just imagine you're sitting in your lovely, cosy living room in Leicester and the fire is on and it's a nice, warm evening and it's December the 12th and you think to yourself, oh, got to go and vote of an eye. Now, what will be the thing that will get you out of that sofa, out of that living room and down to the polling booth? What's the big issue that you're going to vote on?
Well, I'll vote in the morning because I've got my knitting group in the library in the morning.
Oh, all right. So you'll vote in the morning. So it'll be a lovely morning, a crisp December morning, and you're in, but you're still in your living room and it's still lovely and warm and your knitting group hasn't started yet. What will get you from your living room down to the polling booth in the morning?
I have got it in mind, but I don't want to upset too many people.
Go and say it. Say what it is.
I don't want Jeremy Corbyn in.
All right. And so it will be literally to vote for anyone that will not put Corbyn in. Why? What is it about Corbyn that really makes you not want him to be Prime Minister?
Well, I've listened to him a long time now. And he does, the only time he's mentioned the bedroom tax is once, but with Ed Miliband, he mentioned it every Wednesday and challenged David Cameron at the time to get rid of it. One of them have mentioned it in that house.
No, but in fairness, he has. If we look up his statement today, for instance, I'm just going to look it up because he gave quite a good quote today about what it was, the reason why he wanted an election, and it was something along the lines of, I can't actually find the quote, but it was something that we can sort of finally, you know, get rid of the Tories and their austerity and the like and the poverty and all of that kind of stuff. And I wish I could find the actual quote now. Oh, I think we've got it. Have you got it? No, we haven't got it yet. But yeah, he said something about the fact that it will be, you know, a great opportunity to sort of get rid of the Tories. And so that's kind of him saying that he wants to get rid of austerity and those sorts of things, isn't it?
Not the way Edmund actually went for David Cameron, Prime Minister's question time, because I listened to it religiously, as you know. I did vote for him, but...
I found it. Angela, this election is a once-in-a-generation chance to transform our country and take on the vested interests holding people back. He said his party would now launch the most ambitious and radical campaign for real change our country has ever seen. That not convince you at all?
No, because I followed Prime Minister Christian since the 80s. And I've got one of these memories that I say, I know what you said. I write everything down me. And, no. He hasn't done me any favours as my age group and my needs for a disabled person.
Who is going to get your vote instead then, Angela? Who do you have more faith is going to, as a disabled person, going to look after your interests?
None of them, but I've got two people in mind. It's going to be quite hard.
Right.
But it is going to be quite hard to choose the two.
And who are the two choices, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't want to upset really saying much. Can you, whoever gets in on a night, but
anyone, you know, but Corbyn is what you're saying. Anyone but Corbyn, because you just don't, you don't trust him.
No, because he says things like, I get frustrated with him, because like with Ed, he really, when the bedroom counts were in, he did it every Wednesday, as you know, didn't he?
But
he,
is there not an argument, though, to say, Angela, that the Ed Miliband had the luxury of being able to talk about things like the bedroom tax, because, of course, you know, Brexit was nothing but a glint in David Cameron's eye at that point, and no one was really talking about the European Union. In fact, a lot of polling at the time said that the European Union was, I think, the fifth issue in voters' minds, and of course it's moved right up the agenda now, but at the time voters didn't really care that much about the European Union. Whereas since the Brexit vote, of course, most prime ministers' questions, most debates have been, not all, but most have been dominated by some form of Brexit and leaving the EU. So therefore, you know, the bedroom tax just hasn't been as relevant as it was when Ed Miliband was leader.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you think since we've had this vote, do you think democracy's gone thinner because that's all we talk about?
Do I think democracy's gone what, sorry?
Thinner, and it's not being talked about anything else. It's exhausted itself.
I don't think democracy has, but I think that we are using democracy as a sort of stick to beat people with. You know, if you say you want a second referendum, you're anti-democratic. If you say that you don't agree with the first referendum, you're anti-democratic. You know, we can't have too much democracy when it comes to referendums, but we can have democracy when it comes to elections. So I feel like the term democracy has almost become I think democracy used to be seen as a sort of really positive, amazing thing, but I think since the referendum, democracy was almost a swear word. It's like a dirty word now.
Yeah, I do feel like let down by the actual, it doesn't matter, by the actual system as we've got it now, because I just followed politics since the 70s with my dad, and we both were catchy, they've gone out, but we've been all affected, whether you're rich or poor or medium. I think we've all been affected by their policies. They've lied. They only put that referendum in so they could get in. David Cameron got in.
In fairness, that's because prior to the 2015 election, I think it was the 2010 election, it must have been, I think UKIP got something like 4 million votes. And so although it wasn't the top issue among the wider electorate, certainly, you know, that's why the Tories saw their vote decline. And it was only then when Cameron said that he would offer a referendum as a manifesto promise that he got the first Tory majority since 1992. So you're right, he only said it to get in, but it worked, and it was a promise that people clearly wanted kept. Angela, we've got to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed for that. That's Angela in Leicester. What's the one issue that's going to get you down to the polling booth on December the 12th? 03444991000. And again, I'll return to the original question we started with at 10 o'clock, because it's by no means solved. How will a general election sort out the problems that we're facing? How will a general election solve Brexit? Call and tell me how you think it will. 03444991000. That's the number to call here on Talk Radio.
Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
The spin, the soapboxing, the swing.
Your election station, Talk Radio.
Good morning, 26 minutes past midday. It's Christo here on Talk Radio, keeping the seat warm for Ian Lee and Kath. They'll be back later tonight, but this has been a programme giving you the chance to have your say on the events in Parliament and the fact that we finally have a general election on the horizon. December the 12th is the date that's been set, and you've been telling me here on Talk Radio why you think that's a good idea, why it's a bad idea, what are the big issues you're going to be voting on, especially if it isn't Brexit. And of course you can continue that conversation with me. 03444991000 is the number to call. But let's remind you of how we got to this point and the events of today, and well, as you'll have been hearing, Boris Johnson finally winning the backing of MPs for that early general election, failing three times before, but last night MPs backed his bill with a majority, huge majority, of 418.
If at first you don't succeed, then try and try again.
The ayes to the right, 438. The nose to the left, 20.
At the fourth time of asking, it was in the end an emphatic yes from MPs, although during the day that result had at times seemed far from certain. But after weeks of wrangling over Boris Johnson's Brexit bill, he now has what he wants, a general election. That's unless the Lords do something very strange today, and that's not likely. So the election bill should become law by the end of the week. Then it's a five-week campaign to polling day, December the 12th, a campaign that will be dominated by Brexit, with the electioneering already underway.
People have a very clear choice. If they want Brexit, they can vote for Labour or the Conservatives or the Brexit Party. And if they want to stop Brexit, they need to vote for the Liberal Democrats.
The Lib Dems' Joe Swinson promising not to work with other parties if there's a hung parliament. But Tory MP Bob Seeley isn't sure that will be an issue. He's told Talk Radio he's feeling confident.
People are going to be faced with a simple choice. They're going to see Boris as a Prime Minister who's done his utmost to get Brexit through, who's been stymied by a Labour Party that voted to respect the results of the referendum. They clearly haven't done so.
It will be the first December general election in almost 100 years, and there are concerns about voter turnout. Labour's Jack Dromey told Talk Radio people want to change in Number 10.
Boris Johnson, in calling the general election, has acted not so much in the national interest, but in what he believes to be the interests of the Conservative Party. I think our task now is to put national interest above narrow party political interest.
Boris Johnson started his time as Prime Minister by promising to leave the EU, do or die, on Halloween. Now it's Friday the 13th, when he will know whether he gets to finally take the UK out.
So there we go. That's a roundup of how we got to this point, and indeed the news that the election is taking place. And of course, that was the voice of our news editor, David Spencer, there. And of course, this is the station for the election. Talk Radio will be bringing you coverage right up until December the 12th. And of course, that is going to be the day that you go to the polls. Now, is this a good idea? And does the polling on this subject actually give us any indication of whether the Brexit problem will be solved by this general election? Well, Lawrence Yanta-Lipinski is a pollster and joins me live on the line. Morning to you, Lawrence.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. So, firstly, let's just start with the basics. What are the polls saying about where all the parties stand among the electorate at the moment? I think the last poll I saw before coming on air put the Tories ahead about 13 points ahead of Labour. Is that around about accurate?
Well, the thing is that, I mean, the only thing we can really say with some degree of confidence here is that the Tories are ahead. But there is some disagreement between pollsters. We have some pollsters who put the Tory lead down about 3%. We have others, as you just mentioned, up in the teens, some even getting as high as 15, 16. So there is some disagreement there on actually how far ahead the Tories are. But as I say, I think the only thing we can be pretty confident at the moment is that the Tories are ahead of Labour. Then you have the Lib Dems on a very solid third place. And obviously north of the border, the SNP look like they're going to romp to a pretty comfortable victory.
And is the Tories one, Labour second, Lib Dem third, is that pretty much across all polls? Not necessarily the numbers, but the positions.
Yeah, that's pretty standard positioning for the parties, with the Brexit Party then pushing down into fourth place. It's been an incredibly volatile time over pretty much the whole of 2019. We saw kind of the minor parties, or the third and fourth parties, Lib Dems and Brexit, surging around the time of the European elections. And then post-May, and since Boris became leader, the Brexit Party have kind of dropped away a bit, with the Tories gaining and pushing them ahead. And that's what's pushed them above the Labour Party. But the Lib Dem support has kind of remained more stubborn. So the Lib Dems are still riding much higher than they were in 2017. Labour, actually, interestingly, I noticed today that Labour are polling pretty much exactly where they were when the 2017 general election was called, with the Tories actually a little bit behind where they were in 2017. So, you know, we've got a campaign coming up, and the British election study recently found that that individual voters were now as volatile as they've ever been. So, you know, all bets are really off. I think, as I say, the only thing we can be really sure about is that the Tories are currently ahead.
And have you broken down, well, actually, before we get to the breakdown between Leave and Remain, where are the Brexit Party? Because obviously, you make a good point there, because prior to Boris, whilst Boris was keeping no deal on the table, and that no deal was a very, very much more likely before the Benn amendment came in, the Brexit Party had more or less said that they would stand aside for the Tories. Then, obviously, when Boris came back with his deal and Farage was against it, has that made the Brexit Party have a bounce back? Or because Boris Johnson came back with the deal, has that meant that he's maintained the support of the Brexit Party voters that came across to him when he was pitching no deal? I hope that makes sense, because my it was like a very dark forest trying to get through that, but yes.
As is polling.
Yes, I bet.
As well. So I mean, it's still a bit too early to tell what impact there will be. I mean, a lot of Brexit Party voters take their cues from Farage, and he has, I mean, really for the last few weeks been pretty absent from the debate. You know, we've got the odd tweet, but not a huge amount has been said from Farage about the deal. I know he's been critical of it, and really that's one of the great unknowns with this election campaign. For the Tories to get the majority that they need to get Brexit done and to govern in the way that they want, they need the Brexit Party to stay at worst where they are currently. And if anything, they'd like that to drop a little further. And so we don't know what Farage will say and how the Brexit Party voters will react. We've also, since Boris announced his deal, we got lots of stories about process, about whether it would go through, whether we'd leave. But there hasn't been a huge amount written and spoken about the deal and what it actually means. So as we move to an election campaign, Boris's deal then will come up, obviously, against the Remain parties, who will try to tear it down from that angle. If Farage then comes in from the other side, then it really, that deal, which at the moment is certainly more popular than May's deal, but as it gets tested a bit more, as we go through the campaign, then he then may find things a little bit trickier.
Because, I mean, what it used to mean a long time ago, and, you know, I've studied politics for a long time, and I've studied it at uni and the like, and I remember a time where it used to be that that pollsters, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they used to always expect perhaps something of a Tory surge because people didn't like to admit that they were voting Tory prior to the election. And then it would usually be the exit poll that would end up more accurate because there was, I don't know, perhaps some sort of stigma that they felt about voting Tory. But I just wonder, has it actually flipped on its head now? And is it Labour voters that perhaps don't want to admit they're voting for Corbyn, but actually when it comes to the polling booth, they do?
I mean, polling is so hard, because not only do you need to get all your basics right, get your sample right, ask the right questions to the right people at the right time, you also are then relying on the faith that those people are telling you the truth. And so, as you mentioned, one of the things, it was called the shy Tory vote.
I never knew it was called that, the shy Tory voters.
And it was certainly the case in the major polling miss in 1992. And certainly when I was working at YouGov in 2015, one of the key reasons we were not alone in this, all polling companies completely missed how well the Tories would do in 2015. Now, in 2017, I wouldn't necessarily say it flipped on its head and it was people not wanting to admit to voting Labour. But what you had was most pollsters, in reaction to 2015, they changed a lot of how they conducted polls in how they analysed the results. And what they looked to do was, rather than just asking people whether or not they were going to vote, they would predict whether or not people were likely to vote and use that to adjust their figures to come up with a voting intention. And they got it completely wrong. All pollsters who put in these places, they understated the Labour Party. So now we come to 2019, and, you know, you'd have to be far braver than I am to guess which one of those errors, or if indeed neither of those errors, would exist in 2019. So the polls are, you know, they're only as good as the data you get and the analysis you do on them. And it's, as I've said before, it's an incredibly hard job at the moment, particularly with the volatility.
Mm.
And there's a secondary element to this, that even if you get the voting intention figures at the national level completely right, given the fragmentation we see amongst the parties, you know, we're going to have some four-way marginals with Labour, Lib Dem, Tory and Brexit Party all standing a chance of winning potentially. And when you get to that stage, even if you've got the figures right at a national level, predicting how it's going to break down in the 650 different elections we have in the UK is going to be an incredibly difficult task. So at the minute, it's very difficult to say with any confidence both how voters are going to end up voting and how those votes are going to count in each of the individual elections that we have in this country.
Have you done any polling breaking down Leave versus Remain and their intentions? I saw something earlier on the news saying that there was a recent poll, I think done in the last 24 hours, saying that 25% of Leave voters are definitely going to go for the Brexit Party versus 75% or there and thereabouts for the Conservatives. There was a little bit of support for Labour and Lib Dems. Meanwhile, on the Remain side, it was pretty much split between the Labour and the Lib Dems, showing essentially that both the Leave and the Remain vote are split. Have you done any of the drilling down into Leave versus Remain?
Yes, and I mean that's absolutely what Boris is banking on with this election, and it is when you look at all the data, it is pretty clear that the Tories have their current poll lead on the back of consolidating far more of the Leave vote than Labour have managed with the Remain vote, and this is one of the key battles that will happen. There's been lots of academic research that shows that people actually now identify more strongly or as strongly with Remain and Leave as they do with being Labour, Tory, Lib Dem or whatever. So you find that actually it's...
That's really interesting. I didn't know that. So basically party politics has almost been abandoned by many people for Leave versus Remain.
Yeah, for lots of people, being a Remainer or a Leaver is now their primary political identity. So those kind of weakening party ties make it an incredibly volatile election because this is why one of the other things that's going to be fascinating about this election, and we talk about it before every election, and it always seems to be a bit of a damp squib, but whether or not the parties actually work together. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in a formal way through PACs or whatever, but whether or not there are voters who are informed enough to know, in this seat, I would rather vote for the Liberal Democrats, but I know they have no chance of winning. The best Remain option is Labour, so I will vote Labour. And likewise, for the Brexit Party voters, this is not a seat where the Brexit Party can possibly win. Okay, I'll vote for the Conservative Party. And that's one of the things that, and again, when it comes to polling, it's almost impossible to model. So whether or not, and I know that, you know, I'm sure that the People's Vote campaign and lots of those other organizations, they will be putting that message out there in constituencies to try and inform people that if this is your preferred national outcome, then this is the local decision you need to make. And with people identifying so strongly with Remain and Leave, again, like I say, that makes predicting vote shares in each constituency incredibly difficult.
But also as well, and I know this perhaps isn't a point about polling, but it's just interesting that if the major parties are really going to capitalise on the fact that Leave versus Remain are people's main political identities and use that in order to garner votes, well, great, it might win them some seats, but I worry about the long-term prospects of the United Kingdom actually being able to heal and come together if not only is Leave versus Remain people's main political identity, but also if that is being then exploited by the main parties.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of talk of the kind of Americanization of British politics, and that you end up with these two very polarized camps, and certainly lots of the attitudes that you see amongst Remainers and Leavers, and obviously not all, this isn't, you know, there's some nuance here, but you tend to find that attitudinally there are big differences between Remainers and Leavers. And so those divisions can be exacerbated, campaigns can be ran on them, and we move away from kind of the more traditional bread and butter of politics, and we start to focus more on these kind of larger cultural issues, and it comes more a case then of, you know, who do you want in your corner, as opposed to who do you think can run this service or run that service.
What are your polling figures saying about the smaller parties? Because a lot of people, I know that you said that the Lib Dems have been pretty consistent, but are there any other smaller parties that are looking like they'll have a good election?
So the Greens are doing, I mean, they did very well in the European elections earlier this year, and I think that there certainly seems to be more coordination between the Greens and other Remain parties. I mean, Lib Dems, I just read a story before we came on air, the Lib Dems, Greens and Plaid are having discussions around putting up single Remain candidates in some of those places. So those kind of coordinations can help the minor parties like the Greens. I mean, the Greens currently have one MP, but there are a number of other seats that they will have their eye on. You know, they're not polling high enough to kind of make major gains. And I think perhaps, again, with all these minor parties, their impact will be largely down to who they take votes from. You know, the Greens, if they're taking votes, will likely be taking them from other Remain parties. So it's a kind of fascinating subplot to this election is how the parties actually work together, whether or not they do, because what is good necessarily for their party isn't necessarily going to be what they want to happen long term with Brexit. So I think there's lots of issues still to be decided over the coming weeks.
And finally, you're the pollster, Lawrence. You said that it would take a braver man than you to come up with a prediction as to how things are going to go. Well, we think you're brave enough here on Talk Radio, Lawrence. So come on, call it for us. How do you think this election is going to play out? Who's going to get the majority, if anyone?
Either brave or foolish. I'll let you decide which one I am afterwards.
We welcome both on this programme.
So I think that the bookies currently have it about 50-50 whether or not the Tories get the majority. I think one of the things that I'm pretty confident about is that the Tories will likely be the largest party. Hmm. Whether or not they get a majority or even enough MPs to have a coalition, I mean, I can't see the DUP willing to come on, so... Hmm.
And of course, the rules are, sorry to interrupt, but the rules are, of course, that the largest party gets the chance to form a government first, even if they are in a minority at the time. They get the first go, essentially, of trying to put together a coalition. And then if they fail, it goes to the next biggest party.
Yes. And I think that Boris will struggle to get, I mean, you've got the
DUP, as you said,
obviously following the recent votes. I can't see that working out too well for us. And then the other parties are all committing and will be putting in their campaign to either have a people's vote or a vote or whatever. So I think for Boris to get enough seats is still very much in the balance as to whether or not he will be Prime Minister on December the 13th. But I think the bookies are at 50-50 Tory majority is about right.
Yeah, they're both odds on for either a Tory majority or a hung parliament. I don't think either of the bookies have gone.
And then if it's a hung parliament, really, it could be any formulation.
Lawrence, you might end up prime minister.
I sincerely doubt that.
You know, but it's true. I mean, I can see, I think you make a really good point about the fact that if the Tories are the largest party, I'm not sure that any of the other parties trust Boris enough to go into a coalition with him. And I'm wondering whether we might actually end up with a Labour-Lib Dem coalition as a more likely outcome, even though the Tories will be the biggest party to start with. I'm wondering whether that might end up being the biggest likelihood going forward.
Yeah, I think that's certainly as plausible a scenario as many others that that you can think of.
Well, it will be exciting, if nothing else. At least it's all up for grabs. And thank you for holding our hands through it. Lawrence Yanta Lipinski, who is a pollster, giving us an idea of where things stand at the moment. We'll be back in just a moment to find out where you stand on the biggest issues and the biggest issue that's going to get you out of your house in the freezing cold to go and vote in that December the 12th election. All of that coming up here on Talk Radio.
On DAB, online and on your mobile. Countdown to the election on Talk Radio. The radio station that's always first past the post with up-to-the-minute election news, expert comment and instant reaction. Countdown to the general election on Talk Radio.
Ten minutes to 1 o'clock, then of course, I am a mere warm-up act for Daryl Morris, who will be taking over then. But you've still got 10 minutes of this special programme giving you the chance to analyse the events in Parliament over the last 24 hours and the fact that on December the 12th, Merry Christmas, it's come early for you, you're getting an election. And we've been talking about whether that will solve the Brexit problems and the fact that we're in this stalemate. What will be the biggest issue that you will be voting on? Will it be Brexit? Will it be something else? What's actually going to get you off your backside down to the polling station? And Brian has rung from Oxfordshire to answer that question. Morning to you, Brian.
Morning. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Tell me how an election is going to solve this problem, is going to be guaranteed to solve this problem, because I worry that we're not going to get any answers from this election.
No, I don't think we are, to be honest. I think
then what's the point?
My point, I suppose my point would be the fact we've been so confused or misled by both sides of the House debating as to whether or not follow the referendum that was put in place in the first place. I think people have got so many... I think if you go back to the beginnings of the referendum, we voted yes, we're going to leave, or no, we're not. Well, we voted to leave, but then we decided actually, no, we don't really want to leave. We're going to go and leave based on what the MPs decide. Well, that's not really the thoughts of the country.
But if the MPs were voted in by the country, surely that is then representative of where the country is. And we had a general election after Brexit, so people were able to vote for an MP that could be representative of their constituency. Now, if they've done that and the MP being representative has decided to vote in whatever way, well, that's democracy, isn't it?
It's not voting on the people, though, is it? It's not a reflection of what the people have asked for, is it?
Well, the people put them in there as an MP, though. But do you see what I mean? Like,
I see what you mean, but I think
there's been an election after the 2016 referendum, and in that 2017 election, they put that MP in Parliament. The makeup of Parliament was decided by the electorate, and is there not an argument to say, you know, as many people say that it's anti-democratic to not like the 2016 referendum result, isn't it anti-democratic for you to be against the makeup of Parliament because that's what the electorate decided?
Because the MPs are not really reflecting what the public have asked for.
But they voted for them. They put them in there. So that you can't say that because, of course, they're representative of the public because the public voted them in.
But they have decided amongst themselves or led by, I mean, I'm neither here nor there, but I think Jeremy Corbyn has decided amongst... He can't make his own mind up what he wants himself, that bloke.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I think their Brexit policy is flawed. Well, I mean, it's just so confusing. They would negotiate a new deal, but they're not sure whether they would then vote for that deal themselves. They would have to then put the deal that they've renegotiated to their National Executive Committee, but then they'd have a second referendum, but they're not sure whether they'd back their deal or remain in the second referendum. I mean, it's all a little bit confusing.
It's convoluting. It's pointless.
And amazingly, that's the clearest policy they've actually ever had on Brexit. That's the sort of strangest thing, really.
Well, equally, I think from the other side of the house, they don't really quite know what they want either. I think the whole thing was kind of fell into their laps accidentally as a result of David Cameron many years ago.
Seems like many years ago.
It feels like it, yeah. I mean, the reason, I feel the only reason he ever brought the referendum around was to, when he was discussing immigration in the UK. And he sort of kind of fell on that bandwagon to take the pressure off himself. And all of a sudden, he's ended up with the Brexit.
He also had to somehow reconcile the surge in the polls and the surge in votes. 4 million, I think it was, in the 2010 election that UKIP got, showing there was clearly a mandate for some sort of discussion about the European Union and going forward deciding on something. But yeah, we did end up leaving. Yeah. Why do you think this would... Because you actually admit that the election might not solve things, so why not another referendum then, which, you know, you might not agree with the concept of it, but we would get an answer from that?
Because I think we'll still be in the same position now, where we'll have both sides arguing for their own good, and it won't be for the good of the people.
All right, Brian, thank you very much indeed. That's Brian in Oxfordshire, saying that all these MPs arguing going forward would not be for the good of the people. Well, I tell you something that is most definitely for the good of the people, and you get 4 hours of it nightly here on Talk Radio. He's an inspiration. He's a talented... I can't read your handwriting here, Daryl. Does I say broadcaster?
I'll pay good money for this. Go on, get on with it.
Daryl Morris will be here from Hello. 1 o'clock. How are you?
All right, yeah. Much going on, is there? Or what?
No, not really anything. Nothing really been going on. Quiet night, quiet day, really.
Just talked about recipes and stuff,
actually, a recipe for complete carnage, which you just take one House of Commons, fill it with 650 people, and leave to simmer for 3.5 years, and then you end up with exactly what you started with.
Yeah, and here's where we are. Absolutely.
Obviously, you'll be reflecting on this post 1 o'clock.
A bit of that. Ollie Cole, who is, if I may call out Ollie Cole as being a measured and considered broadcaster, a guy who's really
never lost.
No, quite. Very true. Who's very good at kind of holding our hands and taking us through. One of the things, I say this quite a lot, Christophe, but one of the things that's really good about being on the radio in the middle of the night is that it sharpens the senses a little bit, and it gives you a chance to just take a breath, take stock. You can see things perhaps a bit clearly. The rough and tumble of the world isn't happening around you.
Best education I ever had in my life was doing nighttime radio.
Honestly,
I learned more than anything, more than I ever did in school, more than I ever did in college, and you know, I know you are like this because I've heard you. You know, I think it's really important in the middle of the night, and I'm not teaching my grandmother how to suck eggs, to actually say, I don't know the answer to this, and people will ring and educate you, and it's brilliant.
Quite, absolutely, yeah. So
it's amazing.
Quite. So we're going to do a little bit of that on the election, obviously, but also a couple of other things as well to get into. Did you see the TV programme, Who Are You Calling Fat? Did you watch that?
No, I didn't.
So it was on, I think there was an episode on tonight, there was an episode on last night as well, I think.
So what is it? Is it a drama or...?
It's a reality show, essentially. Right. Where 9 obese people go into a house. It's a bit like sort of Big Brother in that respect, but
the
it kind
foundations.
Of ends there. Yeah, and they sort of just chat. They chat about their lifestyles and about being obese. Some people are describing it as fat porn, and some are saying that actually it's a really important conversation about obesity and about lifestyle choices, etc. We're going to get into this. A dietitian is going to tell us exactly which of those things it is, before 1:30 this morning.
And we're also might ring in.
You've nothing to add. And before two, we're also going to hear from Sir Ian McKellen as well, from the red carpet of his new programme.
Amazing. Just Sir Ian McKellen. Just throw that in at the end,
in the middle of the night, why not?
Do you know what I mean? Honestly, I can't believe that. Daryl Morris coming up next here on Talk Radio. That's it from me. Thank you so much for letting me have this conversation with you over the last few hours, giving you the chance to react to the news. December the 12th. Election. I'm going to be back this weekend at 5 o'clock, maybe before, you never know. But don't go anywhere. Ian and Kath will be back later tonight at 10 o'clock. Don't go anywhere though. It's Daryl Morris next here on Talk Radio.
Countdown to the election on Talk Radio.
The decisions, the debates, the deadlines.
Up-to-the-minute breaking news and instant reaction on the radio station that's got everyone talking. Talk Radio.